Right? I don't want to have to walk. Ever,
no.
Really.
I mean, I like walking now. I mean, I'll tell you this. Having a foot, a weird foot saga really makes me appreciate how nice walking is.
Mobility?
Yeah, mobility is pretty sweet. Also, you can't do push-ups if your toes don't work.
Right. You need those.
You do. Oh, you can do them on your knees, but you don't get any of the ab benefits then. I mean, I'm not leaving the house.
What? Yeah. What's your shoe wear if you have to?
I probably sandal, for at least for that foot.
Or like Crocs, I guess?
One time way earlier in this saga, when I had just had the foot treatment, which makes it ouchy for a few days, I went to work with one sandal on and one shoe.
Hell
and
yeah.
As soon as I got to work, I was like, why didn't I just wear two sandals? Like, why did I think that somehow this was more professional than just two sandals? Like, yeah, I don't want to wear sandals to work when I'm walking around all day, but like, I have a medical condition. So
I love that you wore two.
I felt so stupid. I was just like, why didn't I just wear two sandals? Like, this looks worse. This looks like deranged as opposed to just like, I guess so. One person eventually did ask me, what's up with that? And I was like, and they were like, why didn't you just wear two sandals then? I'm like, yeah, I should have.
I thought of that when I walked in the door.
I really had a dilemma where I was like, what seems more professional? And I decided one sandal and one shoe.
Shit, man. If you're walking out the door, you have to make these quick choices. And sometimes they're not the right ones. But the next time, you will.
Next time, I'll wear two sandals.
Whatever shoes you wear, they should match.
Yeah, I was like, do I want to look like some, like, you know, just like I don't give a shit? Or do I want to look like I'm trying but deranged?
Well, the reason is, like, you're like, I would have worn this shoe.
The problem is they can't tell because it's underneath my toe. So you don't see it unless you're looking.
Well, perhaps you're hoping for an invitation of a conversation where they're like, why do you have two different shoes on? And you're like, well, I would have worn this professional shoe that I have on my left.
Yes.
For both feet, but I have an injury.
But you see, my big toe cannot fit in a shoe right now without major out.
So the effort is here, sir, as you can see.
That's kind of what I was going for, but no one asks you that because they just think you're deranged.
All right, well, I suppose we should start.
Let's do it.
Hello, welcome back to Circus Stories, a circus history podcast. I'm your host, Callie B.
Hello, it's me, Mark Renauden.
And we're bringing you another tasty treat from circus history.
The tastiest of treats just for you, lovely listener.
Just for you guys. But first, we will have our circus word of the day.
There are rules and we got to follow them, ladies and gents.
We must. And of course, Mark, I'll let you guess before I tell you what it is.
I'm very good at it. I get it right about 100% of the time.
I would say that's accurate. What you just said.
These are the statistics.
So today's word is floss.
Floss. Well, see, this is almost like a bait and switch because you want me to just describe dental floss or the dance where someone takes like a towel in between their legs and they go back and forth. That is not what we're talking about here. They say floss, but in the circus, what they are specifically talking about is for elephants. It's a really, really big rope. With a very fine material. It's almost like it's like really good hemp, basically, that you that you get in between. And you basically, because we've talked about elephant teeth a lot, ladies and gentlemen, and they are weird, but they need care just like everyone else's. And so this, you kind of wrap it around the tusks and then you just pull it off, almost like you're making a tube around them. And just because of the coarseness, cleans it right off. Elephants love it. And then the inside teeth, we let those fall out because those are weird and scary. So this is mostly for the tusk. This is tusk floss.
Wow, elephant teeth are so weird.
They're weird. Again, if this is the first episode you're listening to, go Google elephant teeth and keep looking until you see stuff that ain't tusks because that's what we're talking about, the non-tusk teeth.
Non-tusk teeth are so strange.
Yes. Very weird.
Elephants are great, but the teeth.
It's either that or I think my other idea for what floss might be is they call credit cards floss because they just swipe right through.
Well, the actual definition is it's a fancy word or like a slang word used often by concessionaires in reference to cotton candy. Floss.
Because you have to floss because it's so sugary.
Well, it probably, but I'll explain why later in the episode. But
oh, later? A delayed? Oh.
Yeah. So today, today's story, we're discussing some fan favorite foods found at the circus. Often like a traditional American circus. I'm sure there's totally different foods served at European circus.
We're talking peanuts. We're talking other foods that I'm not going to spoil. Yeah.
Some circus, like foods found at a traditional American circus, and also like some circus themed foods, and like a brief background of each. So like a brief history of each of these foods.
Hot dog history. Let's hear it.
And of course, we can't cover all of the foods served at the circus.
It would be impossible, folks.
Nor can we cover all of circus influenced foods, but we're going to cover some heavy hitters.
We're going to do the best of for you guys.
Mm-hmm, indeed. Our listeners may or may not know, but my parents worked concessions when they traveled with a circus in the 1970s when they were in their early 20s. And they were not yet married, but they were a couple. My parents met in high school and like we're together. Mm-hmm. So cute.
High school sweethearts. I mean, so they really are the most professional opinions that you could get on this topic.
I would
topic.
Say, yeah, yeah. They have a lot of...
They lived it, they breathed it, and they probably ate some of it.
Yeah, they did concessions, and oftentimes that's a job that's for two people, or at least that's what they've told me is that...
Well, someone's got to scoop whatever they're ordering, and someone else has to, you know, keep Joe Schmo occupied.
Yeah, the reason that they went together is like my grandfather was the manager at Circus Vargas, and he often was like, you guys should come, you know, hop on the show.
Come run the booth.
My dad was like, it's because my grandfather is my dad's dad. And he was like, well, circus is hard. and we also aren't circus performers. So like, we would like to make money.
Yes.
And if you were concessions, at least at that time, and I'm sure this is true now, but you know, food makes money always.
People need to eat. That's just facts.
Yeah. And it was a couple's job. And so that happened to open up. And so my grandfather's like, hey, there's the concessions job. Do you guys want to come? And then my dad was like, yeah, I'll do that.
Let's do it.
So that's how that happened. And then they were there for a couple years. Still super hard. I mean, my mom has told me stories about how they have to like clean the concession trailer with like a toothbrush.
Whoa.
Legit. Because they had like
that's some Cinderella shit.
Yeah, they had like a food inspector like every city.
Oh, yeah.
And so it has to be clean.
You got to keep it clean. I mean, that's a good thing. But keep it tight. That's tough. I mean, I feel like jobs like that in general are so much harder than like the average person thinks.
Totally.
Like, I remember when my one of my cousins had a job when I was younger at like a Baskin Robbins. And I remember her describing like just like it's like scooping ice cream is very tiring.
Oh, it gotta be.
Because you guys, ice cream, they don't have the microwave trick at Baskin Robbins. They got to scoop into the cold, cold, hard, dense ice cream. And if it's properly frozen, that's tough.
Yeah, it starts hard.
When you do it all day, when you're shucking cream, then adds up.
It does.
You gotta get good, you get good forearms, I bet, or at least one forearm.
Yeah, you got one Popeye arm.
Yeah, exactly. You get one big crab claw after that.
So we'll start with a savory, and you already said it, salted peanuts.
Salted peanuts!
Do you just immediately think peanuts, right? Of circus.
I mean, they are the quintessential circus snack. When you think circus, you think peanut.
Yeah, which is
They're for us and the elephants. We should also clarify, I don't think, and you can correct me, but I don't think we're talking about the like... the candy circus peanuts.
Well, we will discuss that, but not until later.
Eventually. Yeah. Right now, we're talking about the actual nut.
The actual nut.
The thing that grows in nature.
Yeah, that grows in the ground. Not a tree nut. A ground nut? I don't know.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
So in the 18th century, the peanut was brought to America from Africa.
So we had no peanuts in America. That seems so weird because they're so, you know, it's like peanut butter, peanuts, like they're all over the place now. So to think that there was a time where just flat out, like, we didn't have it. Didn't grow here.
I read some was like it came from Peru. Some was like some from South America. But also some show that it came in the 18th century to the Americas from Africa. So I'm not sure the exact origin, but it sounds like... that wasn't here
but
before.
We do know there was a time. Yeah, there was a peanutless time in America.
So some reports show its introduction to the U.S. was in the South, primarily in South Carolina, where it became a staple in Southern cooking. It's said that during the Civil War, soldiers from the North and South alike boiled peanuts for high protein and easily accessible snack. Boiled peanuts.
So I think here's a really big debate that we were just going to open the can of worms on.
Yeah, do it.
For open people it. In the comments. So peanuts with shells or without? Do you eat the shell or do you no eat the shell? Because I've been in the center of this debate before, and I know it's going to get people hot and heated about yes or no. Because for where my whole life, the answer to that question is, what? Absolutely not. You don't eat the shell. Why ever would you eat the shell?
Right.
Some people totally eat the shell, and they're like, "You're right. Missing the best part. It's crunchy. It's tough." And so it's all of. Some people dip the peanuts like boil it. Like some people dip mm-hmm. like just let it soak in beer so the shell gets soft and then they eat it. There's all types of things on this.
Monica, our good friend Monica, said that they in Louisiana they. Do boiled peanuts and they like make it like Cajun style and it's like a meat almost, which I initially was like, gross, boiled peanuts sound fucking gross, but then she made it sound like meat and I was like,
I like meat.
Meat sounds good. Peanuts like meat.
All right, if you sounds can good. Do it, if you can trick me,
tastes like meat. Okay, so following the Civil War, soldiers allegedly brought the peanuts home and kind of sparking this craze of boiled peanuts or peanuts in general. In the late 1800s, P.T. Barnum's circus gave peanuts a big popularity boost, advertising hot roasted peanuts, not boiled, from traveling circus carts. Riding on Barnum's success, other traveling food carts soon did the same thing.
So Barnum really began the peanut craze of the circus.
Yeah, as far as roasting. So because then this would shift the peanut preparation from boiled to roasted.
Do we know if other circuses were already selling like boiled ones?
I don't know.
Because it's pretty crazy how many things PT creates circus wise. Like he really does is just like, oh, I am the baseline circus. If I do it, people will also start doing it.
Right, right. I mean, I feel like roasted nuts seems like an East Coast. I don't know. I'm not sure.
I mean, I can picture a neon sign that says that. And I don't know what that means, but I can picture that very easily.
But roasted nuts seem like they would keep longer mm-hmm. than a boiled nut. Boiled nut seems like you got to eat it right away.
Because boiled nut, you know, it seems soggy.
Roasted nuts last longer. Because
a boiled nut, if that gets like cools down, it sounds pretty gross all of a sudden.
Yeah. Also that, right?
What, a damp peanut? Like, you get, no thank you.
Also, like, can you serve that in a bag?
Yeah, I don't know. Make the bag all wet.
Yeah. Wet bag of soggy nuts?
I mean, do you have a lot of wax paper? Because if not, we have a problem.
Yeah. Like, how do you put that on a poster? Like, wet bag, soggy nuts. Yum.
I also feel like, in general, with food, roasting always tastes better than boiling. I feel like boiling is a pretty boring... Like, sometimes I know for, like, cooking science, you gotta boil it, whatever. But... Across the board, pretty much every food that you could do either on, roasting
you're
tastes
so
better.
Correct. You're so very correct.
I mean, people who steam broccoli for health and stuff, roast that. Throw that in the toaster oven, real hot. You get that real dark, crunchy part on the side that it was touching the thing. Oh, it's so much better. It's so much better, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, someone ate a peanut and they're like, this could be crunchier. Let's try it.
And crunchy is the best texture. That's why, like, when I was a kid, I never really liked cooked vegetables because it made them sweeter and softer. And I was like, I don't like this. I want crunch. Yeah. And I'm not big on the sweet. I'm not a big sweets guy. I mean, chocolate, of course.
Right.
But outside of that, I'm much more in the savory department. So get that sweetness out of here.
Well, allegedly, P.T. Barnum's circus wagons traveled across the country, and vendors called hot roasted peanuts to the crowd. So soon, street vendors began selling roasted peanuts from carts. So it did catch on this way.
So hot dog guys were like, something, they got something.
So it did catch on as far as like roasted peanuts. Yeah, it does sound like he did start something. I don't know if he was the first, but he definitely started some sort of popularity with that.
But he did start the revolution.
So soon, peanuts consequently also became popular at baseball games. And also the whole peanut gallery thing, that comes from, and you may know this, but... the peanut gallery refers to like the cheap seats. So in vaudeville and in theater, the cheap seats are either like in the very front or the very back. And people would heckle and either like jeer at the performers and throw peanuts.
Ah.
So that's why they call it the peanut gallery.
It was the snack of the common man. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's right. The common man. Right. Yeah. But often, yeah, I mean, its origin was like vaudeville theaters, you know, like more that entertainment vibe of not circus necessarily, but that, what do I want to say, variety show kind of thing. While peanut production rose during that time, it's around the turn of the century, peanuts were still harvested by hand. So they were leaving the stems and like all the stuff that comes with it, which is fine.
I should Google what peanuts look like on the stem, because I'm just picturing like a hard stalk with a bunch of budded peanuts. And then you just hold it like a stick and you just bite the peanuts off the side.
Well, if you see it, it's like a long stem and they're all, it's like a...
Kind of like Brussels sprouts?
Kind of, yeah. Kind of like Brussels sprouts. They're on either side. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I like the idea that you could just hold the stalk and it like almost like you're holding like a vine of grapes, mm-hmm, and just bite.
It's similar to that. Off. It's just like a string and they're just peanuts on either side. It's fine.
They should do that at fairs and junk. They should serve them on the stalk.
Yeah, they should just cover them with stuff.
It'd be fun.
Yeah. It's so old timey. But so nowadays people eat them roasted, salted, shelled, whatever, you know. I think they're cool in the shells.
I mean, you go to planters.com, you can find a lot of ways to eat a peanut.
Yeah, boy, there's so many peanut websites, I'll tell you.
Oh boy, are there.
So according to the nationalpeanutboard.org website.
There, that exists? That's so great.
I knew you'd like that.
Oh boy.
Records show that it wasn't until the early 1800s that peanuts were grown as a commercial crop in the United States. And they were first grown in Virginia and used mainly for oil, food, and as a cocoa substitute.
Like for chocolate cocoa?
Yeah, like they were like ground it up. At this time, peanuts were regarded as a food for livestock.
Chickens love them.
Yeah, I guess. And food for poor people.
And chickens don't have money.
Well, and were considered difficult to grow and harvest.
Which is weird. If they're difficult to make, why would they be the cheap thing? You know
right,
what I
or
mean?
For poor people. They seem like they would be like,
yeah,
right?
It seems like if they're hard to make, they should be more expensive.
I don't know. That's a great point.
Right? Like, what the heck's up with that? Peanuts are a good source of salt and protein if you add salt, I guess. I actually don't think in
real.
Yeah,
add
I don't
salt.
Think they actually, you know, sometimes you don't think of something and you begin talking and then you realize what you've said.
Like your sandals and your shoe.
Uh-huh. You're like, "Oh, I see what I've done."
So the peanut production steadily grew the first half of the 19th century. They became prominent after the Civil War, like I said, when the Union soldiers found them. They liked them and took them home. And,
honey, you can boil these.
Right? Both sides of the armies subsisted on this food for the high protein.
So you're saying peanuts caused the Civil War.
Yeah. They're like, boiled, not boiled. I hate you. Wouldn't that be great if that was...
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Wouldn't, if it was just that simple, that would be a much more whimsical war.
What a world. That would have been great.
If only history wasn't the terrible actual truth.
And then, so around the 1900s, labor-saving equipment was invented for planting, cultivating, harvesting, and picking peanuts from the plants, as well as for shelling and cleaning the kernels. With these significant mechanical aids, demand for peanuts grew rapidly, especially for oil, roasted and salted nuts, peanut butter, and candy.
Oh, I mean, also, to make French fries, you want peanut oil. That's the oil that you bubble so hot that you make the fries good.
Yeah, so... peanuts, man. Peanut butter. I mean, I could go into peanut butter.
I mean, grab a spoonful and just chomp down.
I could just go off. It goes into how much people eat for peanut, like how much peanut butter. It says peanut butter accounts for about half of the U.S. edible use of peanuts.
That makes sense.
Accounting for 850 million in retail sales each year.
Well, I mean, because there's so many uses. I mean, whether you're doing it for like a sandwich or you're throwing it in some kind of like smoothie, or you're just having a Reese's Piece.
Right.
You know, there's all these different ways that it comes up.
Americans eat more than 6 pounds of peanut products each year.
Hell yeah, we do. No one can beat us in how many pounds of peanuts we eat.
Worth more than $2 billion at the retail level.
Wow. Whoa.
That's crazy, right?
Big peanut butter is doing well. Yeah. And I don't see them doing, maybe that's the stock to get, peanut butter, because where is that ever going to go? Just
Jiffy.
Yep.
So the reason, I think one of the reason they were, peanuts were introduced or sold along with like entertainment, like circuses or carnivals, like places that sell confections, is they were often sold or found at penny candy stores as well. Peanuts were. So like if you go to a penny candy store, there's all these penny candies and then peanuts.
Which again, it's so weird that they're so cheap.
Right? Since they're so hard to harvest. But again, yeah, when they had all this labor saving equipment invented around 1900, then they're like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, maybe that did it.
We could just shovel them out of the ground.
Yeah, now it's like, oh, we can just churn these right out. Yeah,
I think they just probably had these cool plows and we're just like, oh, easier. Just
this is a peanut plow.
Mr. Peanut Plow. Great.
He drives them.
He drives them and his head is so big.
Well, now he has a dumb name. They're like, you know, they made the baby. The first they killed Mr. Peanut. Then they made him a baby, a reincarnation. So yeah, he's like a phoenix.
There's some Mr. Peanut history. I haven't read any
of
that.
Yeah, it all happened, I think, last year or so. But on a Super Bowl commercial, it was like Wesley Snipes and Matt Walsh or something hanging out with Mr. Peanut. And then,
okay,
yeah, it was just like, what, we're, okay, whatever, yeah, sure. And then Mr. Peanut dies, and then, like, a few months later, they're like, he is risen from the ashes. He is now Baby Peanut.
Oh, okay.
And I think they were trying to jump on the Baby Yoda craze, which just, come on, Baby Yoda did it. You can't beat Baby Yoda. Just don't stop trying. No.
Don't even try. Why not even try?
And then now they're having him metabolize quick and grow up. So now he's like, he has like a name like Jeffrey Peanut or something stupid now. And he's like horrible. A teen, but he also has the monocle still. It's like you should have just let him be like either kill him and make that the bold choice and then he's gone. Or don't fucking Benjamin Button us and give us the, like, you know, the age-changing peanut. Like, we don't need that.
Or make somebody funny, Mr. Peanut. Like, Norm MacDonald was, like, KFC.
Yeah, the way they do the KFC thing where they make everybody a different, you know, just do something fun. Like, making him die and then rapidly age to, like, it's kind of like the comic book thing where they kill off like a superhero and then like an issue later they're like,
but
they're back, baby. And it's like, stakes don't mean anything anymore. Because
they fell in this oil and it's fine.
Yeah, I want Game of Thrones rules where if they die, they dead.
They dead for always.
They dead. And you're like, oh, shit, no one's safe. If Mr. Peanut can die, what other mascot can die? See, that's right? The precedent I want to start.
Stakes, real stakes.
Yeah, don't do this whole like pulling the rug out from under me. Just kidding, he's a baby now. That's not how things work.
Come on, planners. Get it together.
Get together.
I started doing hot dog history and then I was like, I can't. I can't do this.
That's a great sentence. I started doing hot dog history. What good hot dog website did you have to go to do hot dog research?
I mean, I just started doing a history of hot dogs and like
historyofhotdogs.com.
Yeah. And also Jamie, my pal Jamie Loftus, co-host of the Bechdelcast. What? Shout out.
Good stuff. Go check it.
Yeah. Great podcast, Bechdelcast. And also she just put out this cool podcast. It's very cool. It's called Lolita Podcast, which
I've listened to a bunch of it. It's very good.
It's very informative, but it's different content, but it's very cool.
It's different and definitely trigger warnings sure. But I think it's very good and also like important because it's the kind of stuff that like it's been integrated in American culture so much, and it's such like a passive thing that you don't always notice that like watching.
For sure.
This kind of thing is just like everywhere, and if you don't notice it, that like it's just going to keep happening.
I mean, there's through lines in everything that we discuss, like when we were talking about Myrtle Corbin, it's like everything's like young and pretty. She's a young girl. Come check her out. Yeah,
there's such a weird fascination with like very young. It's like that's like a huge selling point in a lot of things, and it's very weird that it is so much and has been for like ever. Like
for,
I mean,
forever.
The Myrtle thing, that was like 1800s. You know what I mean?
Sweet it's like, 16. Her thing said sweet 16.
Yeah.
It was like in the 1800s. It's like, well, this is not new.
That shit's everywhere. And so I think that listening to the podcast is a good way to like kind of like be more aware that is going on.
Because
it's very easy due to how much it's happening to not notice
it. But so Jamie had posted something where she's taking a week off because her brain has been this for
months.
And I mean,
and there's all this gross junk stuck in there.
I hung out with her in like July and she was doing this and she was just like, my brain is melting.
Oh, absolutely.
And I was like, got it. But she posted something where she's reading books like for fun.
Yeah, that's
and
good.
One was History of Hot Dogs. And I'm like, I'll ruin this for people. Like, cause there's books about
that's
this.
That's so, I would love to know how big that book is.
Oh, I was like, what a great read.
is that a thick ass book or is that like a little paper?
It looked like somewhat small, but also like, man,
I'm picturing like an Encyclopedia Britannica like size, like hardcover wizard's tome about hot dogs. That's what I want.
The history was like started about Frankfurters and then hot dogs, but I was just like, man, I could talk about hot dogs for hours and hours. Also, I cut out hot dogs because I knew we would talk about them for a long time.
They would derail us. Yes. Okay.
Which, it's fine.
Good foresight, because look what's happened and we just merely mentioned a book about hot dogs. Hot dogs are very funny, okay, ladies and gentlemen?
Who doesn't love hot dogs?
It's a very stupid, funny food.
They're so good. They're good. I love them.
Shout out to Nathan's. Haven't had it in so long.
I love hot dogs so much. Ugh. So my mom would tell me this story. She'll probably be bummed that I'm including this, but whatever. She worked concessions and they would serve hot dogs. And
of course.
It was like mustard or no mustard. In the 70s, they didn't have like the pumps on the outside of the trailer, like where you serve yourself. They served it for you. They're like, we put it on for you. That's it. You don't have your own autonomy for mustard. Like,
nope, you're not allowed. We can't trust you with that kind of pressure.
We don't trust you with mustard, correct. But so when she would make her own hot dogs, she would have like mustard and relish and sauerkraut. And then people would see her eat them, like customers, and they'd be like, where's that hot dog? And she's like, oh no, this is mine. Like, this is for me.
This is the just for me stuff.
And she would say that would happen a lot where they're like, where's that on the menu? And she's like, no, this is not on the
menu.
This isn't. This is special.
You don't get everything, chuckleheads. This is for me.
That was so funny. So look up History of Hot Dog book, somebody.
It's fun that it exists.
Yeah, we'll tackle it one day.
One day.
Not today, because that's a whole episode in itself.
Oh, yeah. And we've only scratched the surface of topics already on this episode. We've done, what, two things? Peanuts and hot dogs.
Right? Yeah, we've got like five more, eight more. Who knows?
100.
So poppycorn.
Poppycorn!
According to thenibble.com. I love these places.
Oh, my God. These website names have been real good today.
They're great. So it's said in history that Native Americans brought popcorn to the first Thanksgiving. Okay, sure.
Okay.
And that the way to eat popcorn at the time was to hold an oiled ear of corn on a stick over fire, wait for it to pop, and then chew the popped kernels off
the
cob.
That's cool. I would love to see what that looks like. It sounds like it wouldn't work, but I've never seen that before.
So like, you've seen it in a cartoon, a Goofy cartoon for sure.
Sure. Yeah, why not?
It's just like that, though. You know what I mean?
That sounds like a fun way to... Why don't we still do that?
Yeah. Well, probably because it's probably not as delicious, I bet.
Yeah, maybe not.
But I'm sure that's not how that happened, but surely some boorish colonizers were shown something, and then they stole it for themselves.
Yes, they probably like looked from far away with a telescope, and they're like, "Gar, I'm going to make them like sound like pirates. Gar, let's steal that idea for ourselves."
Yeah, exactly.
And like, why are you talking like that? It's like, oh, well, because we're being evil right now, so I want to be. We're being bad. We're being bad men right now.
Yeah, bad men. So, but regardless, after learning about popcorn, colonists began enjoying the first puffed cereal. Breakfast cereal. Well, loose use of that word, I would imagine.
Popcorn and milk, baby!
Yeah, so they would use popcorn served with cream or milk, which sounds very rough to digest.
Gross! Gross! Yuck!
That's gross!
Big yuck!
Yeah. So in the 18th century, after the corn harvest, rendered fat would be thrown into a cast iron pot sitting over an open fire.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. When the fat was hot, farmers would toss in corn kernels, a touch of sweet molasses or other sweeteners, and then wait for the corn to pop into a sweet hot treat, which sounds like...
Oh, is that what...
Kettle corn? Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you see dudes doing that now, that's like the old-timey way. Like when you go to like... I don't know, wherever. And they're like, this is the old way they would do it. It's like, because it's kind of how they did
look,
do it.
When you're cooking with lard, you're cooking good.
Yeah, right?
That's the good stuff. Animal fat, get the F out. That's the tastiest shit ever.
Lard, right? I tell y'all, my great grandma would cook with lard, and it was just like, thank you.
My grandma would too, and my mom even like once mm-hmm. in a blue moon, if she goes somewhere and they have lard, she's like, oh, I'm gonna get some lard, because yeah. like that's where the good cooking is.
Right? It is cooking with lard. Baby.
I may have said this story before, but I'm just gonna say it anyway, mm-hmm. and we can cut it out if I've Indeed. Already said it. But. There was a time when one Thanksgiving, I had a buddy who was a very good cook, and he made the turkey. And when we were done, he was basically like, do you want any, like, of the leftovers? Like, what do you want me to leave here? And I was like, honestly, dude, the main thing I want is the fat from the turkey, like the turkey juices yeah. that came out. And he's like, yeah, how much? I'm like, honestly, all of it if you don't want any. And he's like, all right. And I got it all. And then I was cooking everything in turkey fat so for good. A while. And I was like straight up like, you know, eggs, not using olive oil or anything to cook it or butter. It was turkey fat. So everything good. I ate was cooked in turkey fat. And then I was like, why am I getting fat? What? Why am I gaining weight? And I'm like, oh, I'm literally eating fat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Every meal I'm eating, I don't know,
spoonfuls a ladle of full fat.
Of spat, of fat. Like, what? Yeah, Nadoi.
It doesn't cook out.
No. Like, and look, it's delicious, but it's yeah. also, you got to make it a treat sometimes because.
That's so funny.
Yeah, I was just like, why is this happening? Excuse me, the world. And it's like, you're eating it.
Yeah.
You're straight eating fat.
You're gaining weight because you're eating fat.
Yeah.
That's how that works. That's mm-hmm. so funny. I do that all the time where I'm like, why am I gaining weight? It's like, well, you've been eating cookies for a week, so
yeah. It's like, but cookies, they're nothing, they're so
that's
light
that's different behavior than usual. So okay, so by the 1840s, corn popping had become a popular recreational activity in the U.S. because nothing else is going on.
How bored are people that's the recreational activity?
They're like, well, we're gonna go to work, but tonight We're popping corn.
I mean, look, I will say it is fun to watch the kernels jump up and down.
I mean, I'll buy Jiffy Pop and I still enjoy it. I still doing it.
It is visually, I can kind of see why they did it, but
yeah,
it's like, that's what I'm going to do when I go home.
Yeah, I mean, in the 1840s, Jesus, man.
Yeah, why not? It's like, well, the candle's going down. I'm getting sleepy, so I'm just going to watch some corn pop, eat it, and then go straight to bed.
Yeah, it's like, this is TV. This is our programs.
Yeah.
God. So by the 1870s, the treat was sold in stores and at concession stands and at circuses, carnivals, and fairs. So in 1885, a man by the name of Charles Creeders, who was the founder of the Chicago Snack Equipment Company, which sounds fun.
Now, are we in the popcorn machine?
Yeah. So this guy Creeders, his company was called C. Creeders & Co. He invented the first commercial popcorn machine.
Oh, yeah. Those are good.
Yeah. And by 18, it was giant.
Yeah, I bet it was. Probably the size of a refrigerator.
Yeah. By 1893, he introduced the first mobile popcorn machine.
Oh, you guys know the ones. Those ones with the wheels on them. It's like a little cart you can pull around.
That's exactly what it is. And so he introduced it at the midway of Chicago's Columbian Exposition. It was reported by the Scientific American that the whole mobile machine that he introduced in 1893, which looks more like a carriage, weighed about 400 to 500 pounds. It could be easily drawn by a boy. What? Like a super strong boy.
I mean, every business has a boy that pulls all the weight. Yes.
400 pounds.
You're going to talk to a big boy. That's all.
Yeah, you got a big, big boy.
You got a big boy, give him a nickel a day, and he will pull all the heavy stuff.
Or it could be pulled by a small pony or mounted on trucks. So mm-hmm. I'm going to show you this freaking.
I feel like, especially when I was a kid, and I honestly, even now, places do this, it's exciting. But any place that just like in the back has like free popcorn is great.
Yeah.
People love popcorn.
Here it is. Yeah, but so that's his.
Oh, this is a cool looking one.
It's giant.
Like, it's bigger than I was thinking, but yeah.
So that's more of like a later model of his that was like in the 1900s.
Big old thing.
Improved version, but still pretty close to what his was.
I like that he's got a circus aesthetic going on this thing.
Yeah,
you know?
It's very like ornate.
A lot of reds, frilly, like, you know, edges and junk.
Mm-hmm. So the Creeders Popper allowed his vendors to follow crowds, especially ones near movie theaters. So he would basically like follow crowds at venues.
Oh, he just was like, where are a lot of people? I'm going to bring the corn.
Yeah. So like carnivals, plays, theaters, and then movie theaters, he would just like be, he would follow them. And so this is possibly why popcorn is so linked to movies now, because people would just like get popcorn because he was around.
Makes sense. I mean, because this thing, I mean, for those of you who are not looking at the picture at this very moment, it's like the size of like, probably a little bit smaller, but it's roughly like a food truck. It's like, it mm-hmm. would serve the same purpose as like a mobile thing that would give out a very specific treat, and you had to go wherever that was to get it, or rather he would bring it to wherever people
were. He would just like find where people were and just go, like, if they're just all,
I want to be where the people are, he would sing to himself every day as he pulled his popcorn, or rather while he got his big boy to pull the popcorn cart.
His very big boy who could pull 400 pounds. My god,
I need to hire one big boy for my popcorn business.
Or his small pony.
Yes, or a small pony, whatever comes first.
Oh my gosh.
The big boy will be paid slightly more.
And there's like a relationship with, you know, popcorn in movies. It seems like it was very popular. And then when TV was introduced, it became less popular because people aren't going to the movies as much because they were staying at home.
People were home.
Right. But then Big Popcorn must have pushed for people to make popcorn at home, because then it resurged.
They got to follow the trend.
Right. They resurged maybe with like Jiffy Pop or whatever, and like popcorn makers. So it kind of bounced back in the 70s.
I wonder if this was kind of like the start of America using corn for everything.
Maybe. That's,
you know what I mean? Because nowadays it's like literally everything's made of corn.
And like corn oil and corn. Yeah. So true. Mm-hmm.
Corn oil, corn starch. I mean, you know, they make sugar out of corn. Yeah. It's like everything is made out of corn. And maybe this is the rise of big corn we're talking about.
Big corn. So in 2004, cinemas sold about 60 million pounds of popcorn.
Hell yeah.
And the average American ate 70 quarts of popcorn.
Hell yeah.
Right? Today, Americans consume about 17 billion quarts of popcorn.
Hell yeah.
Each year, which is crazy.
Give us the quarts. We need more quarts. Quarts of corn.
So much of this production comes out of Indiana and also like Nebraska, although I'm sure they don't corner the market on popcorn.
No. Too much of it.
They're the top dogs in the corn production. Popcorn.
Top corn dogs.
And I think this is true with a lot of popcorn selling places, like, you know, the movies and such, but they just pour a lot of salt on the popcorn so that they sell more soda. And that's, I've heard from concessionaires, they say the same. It's like, they just put a ton of salt.
I mean, that's McDonald's trick too. It's just more salt. I mean, hell, I'm pretty sure they have salt in their coffee.
I think so.
I think so. I mean, I know they have salt in their salads. I mean, they just
have salt in their salads. I've heard that as well.
I mean, salt, here's the thing. Salt tastes really good as long as you don't put too much on.
I love salt.
And it's a very fine line between like, a lot of salt and too much.
There's a fine line. That's true.
Oh, yeah. Because as soon as it's too much, it's way too much. But like McDonald's, they have done some kind of science. And I think a lot of fast foods have done this, where they figure out what that line is and they stay right the fuck on it. Because that, if you ever look at the like actual like health nutritional facts of it, it is chock full of sodium, but like it just tastes good. It doesn't taste too salty. So I don't know how they do it, but.
Yeah, then we're all just monsters for it.
We can become robots.
Yikes.
Yum, yum, yum. Eat it up. Tastes good.
Yikes, yikes, yikes. So the next delicious treat we're going to discuss
is
cotton candy.
Heck yeah, dude. I mean, this is the iconic stuff. Now, here's a history question.
Sure.
How long did it take before they figured out they could make it blue?
That's a good question, because I don't know. I mean, the pink and the blue and the flavors wasn't really introduced until
they have flavors of cotton candy.
Oh yeah, of course.
I've been out of the cotton candy game for a while,
but not until like way later, because the first cotton candy was flavorless.
It was
like sugar flavor.
Oh, just sugar. Oh, I see.
Yeah, I mean, it was flavored like sugar.
I haven't had cotton candy in a really long time. Because I, like I said earlier, I'm not a big fan of sweets, and that's literally all cotton candy is. But I forget if modern cotton candy, like the baseline, like if you just go and order, can I have one cotton candy and they give you the pink stuff? Does it have its own unique flavor? It does, right? It's not just sweet, right?
They can put flavor. Wait, like your question is the what?
Like, you know how like bubble gum is a flavor. It's not just like sweet. I'm wondering like, Because I know that there's like cotton candy flavored things, but I'm trying. I honestly haven't had cotton candy in so long that I forget if it actually is its own flavor, or basically that just means mega sugar.
Yeah, I think it's just mega sugar, like bubble gum. you know what I mean? It's like, which is bubble gum is like sugar flavor.
But bubble gum has its, you know what I mean? Like there is a taste difference between bubble gum and cotton candy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I do wonder like where that extra flavor came from for cotton candy. And, mm-hmm. and it sounds like that did not originate there. It was just a sugar ball. And then they were like, let's add a little bit of, you know, some maybe like in a lab, they're like, what do we think this should taste like? What do we think? Right. When you look at insulation, what do you wish it tasted like? And then they made that.
I'm not sure because for a long time it was just spun sugar and it just was fluffy. And I think that maybe they integrated the color. And the flavor is not till way later, really, really way later.
Yeah. I wonder how they figured that out. Because that does sound like it was just a flavor made in a lab then. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? As opposed to like what naturally happened to the flavor of sugar when it spun that way.
Right. Because they must, when they do the oil or like, I'm sorry, not the oil, but like the sugar spinning. And when they melt it down, they're caramelizing it and spinning it. They must infuse that part with like the blue raspberry or whatever the fuck. At that moment.
You know, and I bet you the reason they made it pink because they were like, we should kind of move away from the whole spider web aesthetic, right? You know?
Well, and it's like white is, I think it changes color a little bit. It's not like white.
Yeah.
It's not hot pink, but it's not white. It's like a soft pink, which people associate with pink. So maybe they're like trying to jazz it up and make it darker pink.
Yeah, maybe they're just like, oh, ours is pinker and therefore more cotton candier.
Yeah, or just more exciting to look at for sure. Because a lot of cotton candy, traditional, is just, it's not bright snow white, but it's white. They probably just pumped up the color over time. And then people are like, let's make that a flavor.
Yeah, they're like, the more dense the color, the more people like
it. This is all guessing.
I mean, we're talking food science here, ladies and gentlemen. We're speculating. Yeah, we ain't food scientists.
Food science.
We might be hot dog millionaires, but we are not food scientists.
Right. Hot dog. Not cotton candy millionaires. So we know now, like at the circus, cotton candy was, and I'm sure maybe now it's called floss.
Yep.
It's like the slang is for floss. Mm-hmm. So it's tough to trace the actual exact history of cotton candy at the circus and like who started it, who was the originator or like the inventor.
Yeah, who's Papa Candy?
Right, Papa Candy. But I have a few answers. So, but the definition is it's a fluffy, sweet confection whipped from spun sugar gathered or wound around a stick or cone shaped paper, right? So that paper, there and then go. It's like spun around from this machine. So,
mm-hmm.
Although cotton candy, as we know, is technically not invented until the late 1800s, early 1900s, the act of spinning sugar has been around since the 1400s in Italy. So the process was quite labor intensive. Cooks would use forks to separate melted sugar into individual fine strands, like they would pull it. Mm-hmm. These strands would then be draped over a bowl or similar object to form a web. You know, quote unquote, a web over this shape, this bowl or whatever, then the dessert would then be consumed after drying. And so consequently, so because it's so time consuming to spin the sugar, this was typically enjoyed by only wealthy people.
Ah.
Back in Italy or in Europe, you know.
Which is it's kind of interesting to think about it as taking a long mm-hmm. time, because I feel like any time you go now, there's just that like little like, you know, circle that people just run it right through. And then there you go. Cotton candy has been formed.
In the late 1800s, it evolves. So there's four people credited with its creation, the cotton candy. There is
Dr. Candy.
So there's two gentlemen, William Morrison and John C. Wharton. William Morrison is a dentist and John C. Wharton is a candy maker.
The dentist, of course. What an evil plot.
There's two dentists. It's crazy.
They both had the idea. If we can make the most sugary right. thing imaginable, we will get more business.
And then so separate from William Morrison and John Wharton, and then Thomas Patton, and then there's another dentist, Joseph Delarose Lescow.
Oh boy, fancy dentist.
Yeah, there's like a few people that were originators of cotton candy machines and cotton candy making.
I mean, it is a suspicious amount of dentists.
It is, right? So there's two separate cotton candy machines that were patented. One in 1899, one in 1900. So 1899, the dentist, William Morrison, who is from Tennessee, teams up with candy maker John C. Wharton to come up with this electrical machine. Though some notes say Morrison started his like formulas for this machine and working on it in 1897, but 1899 is when it was patented, so we'll go with that. So this contraption that he made uses centrifugal force to spin and melt sugar and later flavoring and color. So later on, the flavoring and color is integrated in that melting sugar process. Mm-hmm. And then through small holes, it like feeds in the cylinder.
I mean, it makes sense because when you order it, it does kind of look like it's just kind of materializing on the sides of the machine as you go.
And then the end result was not yet called cotton candy, but fairy floss.
That's a fun name for it.
Right. Because he's a fucking dentist.
Sure. Hey, it's all making sense.
Well, we'll call it floss because that's fine for your teeth. Like, that's so weird to me.
Yeah, and also like a reminder. It's like you should floss after you.
Yeah, this fairy's going to fuck your teeth up.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be a lot of sugar deposits in here and you need to get those out.
It's like tooth fairy, floss. He's just really checking boxes. Oh, yeah. But he's definitely getting new customers, I guess.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's such an evil dentist scheme to get people to get more cavities.
It is.
Can you think of something more made of sugar than just literally blown sugar? Yeah.
It's just a stick of sugar. Like, here you go.
He's like, how dense could I make a sugar treat? It's like, what if I made it? What if it's just sugar?
What if it's super light, but it's still all sugar?
I mean, it's pretty big. If you densed it down, maybe like a baseball or twice the size of a baseball amount of just pure sugar. Like, that's literally what it is.
Yeah. And if they have cavities, it won't hurt because they're not biting down. They'll never feel it.
Yeah. So you won't know until it's too late. And all of a sudden you got four calves and you're like, well, come to me. I made the stuff. I know how to treat it.
It's fairy fly. It's
very floss. But by the way, you should start flossing if you do want to keep your real teeth.
Yeah, your remaining teeth, because I've knocked out four.
Your remaining teeth, because I have taken a few. Yeah. Those are mine now.
So in 1900, Thomas Patton, not a dentist, was experimenting with caramelized sugar. He used a gas fire rotating plate to spin sugar. Then he would form threads of cotton candy with a fork. These threads were then collected and then formed into a big cotton ball, which is now cotton candy.
So he would like pasta it up, like stick his fork in the spaghetti and spin it around.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. The dentist and the candy maker were in 1899 with their patent. And then Thomas Patton came back in 1900 with his patent. He presented his machine at the Ringling Brothers Circus, where it was a hit and sold just like popcorn and all the other stuff to children. And he received a separate patent for his machine and processing for his cotton candy.
Okay.
Different machine. Similar though.
Similar machine.
So it was like gas fired plate and he would use like the fork to spin the sugar versus the other guy that would use like, he would just melt the sugar. It sounds like the first machine was just a different kind of cylinder versus this guy was heating it up from the bottom as opposed to the sides. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's like he was like looking at the coal, like spinning bottom for like making pottery.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, but what if you put pasta on that and a fork in, it would go around your food. Wait a minute. What if you take out the pasta and put in a bunch of sugar? Maybe we have to make the sugar hot. Yes, let's do it. Print it, published. And someone else is like, guy, my guy. We got to use vent technology and vent in the sugar. And he's like, too late. I've already put a lot of money into this. And it's like, all right, I'm going to make my own thing. I mean, this is a lot of sugar science.
So much sugar science, right?
It's a lot.
Because that's why you have to have a candy maker to know how hot it needs to get, when it's cooling, all that stuff.
Which, you know, candy maker is just like it basically is candy scientist.
It is. Have you ever tried to make hard candy? It's so hard.
No, I don't think I will.
It's so hard. It's really, really hard. It's like there's like temperatures and like thermometers and it's like in pots.
Yeah, if you
so
thought
hard.
Baking was a big deal, dude, buckle up for candy
it's
making.
It's insane.
Well, because candy is like you really have, it's basically just chemistry to turn sugar into a shape.
It is. It's exactly what it is. Or like caramel. If you ever tried to make caramel even, it's like, man, it's hard.
I mean, remember those like taffy making spinning machines? That was another thing I'd see on like at the boardwalk. You'd see a store that had that.
Yeah.
And it's like they have to keep spinning it in that weird way
or it will harden.
Get hard.
Yeah.
And it's like there's so many weird, it's basically like the cement, same thing with cement. It's like keep this moving, which is disconcerting when you compare the two of them because one of them you
and
eat
you're
and
gonna
one
put it inside you.
Yeah. And it's probably just as good for you.
Yeah, you should just be eating cement. So Morrison and Wharton, the dentist and the candy maker, debuted their cotton candy at the St. Louis World's Fair in 1904. So whereas Thomas Patton had shown his at Ringling Brothers in 1900 and was already a hit. So, but Morrison and Wharton, they show at the World's Fair, St. Louis World's Fair, 1904. And this fair was meant to be like the event of the century. It had its official opening on April 30th. It boasted many different attractions, including a Ferris wheel and a circus.
Oh, wow.
Over 20 million people visited the fair during its run from April to December. So it was like over 7 months. And to Morrison and Wharton's delight, many of the fairgoers were super impressed by this fairy floss, of course.
Of course, why not?
Obviously, right. So they make a killing during this span of over 7 months with their cotton candy, their fairy floss machine. They sold this snack for 25 cents a box. I'm sure why it says box, because it was on a stick.
Yeah. Is that like how big is a box?
Yeah. So, and it's so popular that by the end of that few months in December, over 68,000 boxes of cotton candy were sold.
68,000 times 25 cents.
So they made over $17,000.
That's a lot of money from cotton candy. Also in the 1800 times.
It's like over $500,000. Yeah. When people were making like between $200 and $400 annually themselves.
You know, when someone has like a new snack or candy or something that like takes the world by storm, I suppose that does happen and does make me wonder, like, did the people who made Dippin' Dots think this is what was going to happen? You know what I mean? They're like, this is the new thing. Yeah. This is crazy. People are going to love this.
This and then is it's it.
Like, you know, if you went to the science center, you got Dippin' Dots as just like a, you know, this, it's kind of fun that they're different, but they taste worse. They do taste worse.
Yeah, they hurt my tongue.
Yeah, they have less flavor. Yeah. And it's hard, and it's not easier to eat.
Yeah, and the options are not a lot.
And the cream aspect is gone. So you're removing a lot of what's good about ice cream and replacing it with just a different texture and less flavor.
Yeah, like cool astronauts eat this?
Yeah, and it's like, what? Cool. Why would astronauts eat that? Why would NASA be like, you know what? Astronauts need more of ice cream. It's like,
yeah, well, they want
to
have options.
I'm sure they do, but it's just like, of all the food to try and get to them, why is that? Why are they like, ice cream? We got to make sure that they have their snacks.
Well, if I was an astronaut, I would have to have ice cream. Truly. It would be on my rider.
I mean, not if you were astronauting with me, because that is an enclosed space and I would get the toots real quick.
They all have the toots. Could you imagine? Who knows what that does to your butt?
It helps propel you through space.
Oh, that's so fun. Oh, man.
But also, there's no air for that to dissipate in. So you just gotta...
It's just toot party all the time. It never goes away.
Toot party. I mean, I would imagine they have some kind of air filters.
They just have a toot hole that you stick your tush in and then it goes out into space.
Yeah, you stick it in and then space sucks the fart right out of
How
you.
How scary.
But you got to be really quick with the release valve, because if you do it too long, it'll suck your entire butt out.
You have to have a friend to push the button, open and close.
It also gets very cold on your butthole, and that is uncomfortable.
Oh my gosh, ice your tush.
But that's what you have to do, otherwise you have to breathe farts for however long.
It's worth it. It's worth it for ice cream, for space ice cream. So these dudes made over 17,000, which equated to over $500,000 in today's economy. Also, sugar only costs 4 cents per pound. So
cheap. Cheap as heck.
Yeah, so they're just like, their overhead was like not a lot, man.
Very low overhead.
So they're killing it.
It's crazy to think that sugar is so cheap, and then nowadays they're like, sugar, too expensive. Let's make it from corn. Right. It's like, it's already cheap.
It's so,
man,
yeah, it's
on.
Also very cheap now.
And they're like, no. We're going to make one that's even cheaper and way worse for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just decimates the planet.
And it's like, and your dumb mouths won't notice the difference. And
yeah, you sure won't.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, sounds good. After selling cotton candy at this World's Fair, Morrison and Wharton continued their business selling cotton candy to friends and clients in their native state of Tennessee. Later, they began to market both the machine and the candy in newspapers such as the New York Times with an updated cheaper price of 5 to 10 cents, not the 25 cents.
Ooh, dropping it by a lot.
Yeah, still advertising as fairy floss.
They're like, we made too much money.
Yeah. We just need to really market this to the masses.
The first time that's ever been said by a business. We're making
I know,
too
like
much
they've gone down
money.
In price.
Yeah, what's that
my
about?
Gosh. I guess they always wanted to make it affordable.
Good for the common person, but yeah, like right? Maybe they did think like they would make more money if they made
they're
it cheaper.
Like, we're gouging people because this is like 10 cents for a box now. It's like it's four cents per pound of sugar. I guess we should lower it.
Oh yeah, and then you get the people who bought it for 25 cents, and they're like, everyone should have to pay 25 cents because I missed out.
I know, I was the last customer in December. What the fuck? But it had taken America by storm. And people wanted to make this treat themselves. And they could purchase this like hand machine directly.
Like, I have air vents. I have sugar at home. Why can't I do this?
They wanted to purchase this machine directly from the Electric Candy Company, the corporation that Morrison and Wharton started in order to bring this fairy floss to the masses. So supposedly around the same time, another dentist.
Uh-oh.
By the name of Joseph Delarose Lascaux from Louisiana.
I was really hoping it would be Joseph Dentist because it started with
Joseph
a D.
Joseph Dentist.
Yeah.
He's said to have introduced another, introduced cotton candy to his dental practice. That's what it's, I've read that multiple times.
What,
I'm like,
what? Huh?
You introduce cotton candy to your practice. I don't
Everyone
understand.
Everyone should be rubbing a little bit of sugar on their teeth every night.
It's good for your gums. Yeah.
It's great. If your mouth likes it, thinks how much your gums will.
Yeah, yum, yum.
And they're like, all right, doc. And then they come back in a month and they're like, I have a lot of ouches in my mouth. He's like, come to me. Maybe it's not enough sugar.
Did you eat that candy? You should keep eating it.
You should keep eating it. In fact, you don't even need to eat it. Just rub it on your teeth.
Yeah. And are you smoking? You should be smoking too.
You should be smoking more. Your gums are too pink. You should smoke more.
They should be a little browner.
Yes. They should look gross. And they don't currently.
So though some reports say that this introduction, because I read some reports say like around 1900, but then some reports say that he introduced this cotton candy around 1920. That seems to be more accurate. And I'll tell you why in a moment. So Joseph Delarose Lascaux did not patent his cotton candy making practice.
Uh-oh.
But he is credited with giving it the name cotton candy.
You got to patent your stuff, ladies and gents.
I mean,
that's where all the money is. And then you get to name it.
So the early patented machines, the ones that Morrison and Wharton were selling to the public, were found to be defective. They weren't working so hot. And they didn't last long.
They exploded.
Some machines would break while others would like have loud rattling sounds.
One made a Frankenstein in someone's home.
Yeah. So there was a company, the Gold Metal Products Company, and they came up with a more dependable cotton candy machine that used a spring base.
Huh?
Their base wasn't spring loaded. So I think that their base would break a lot versus the spring base, which would continually move and was more reliable.
And is sillier looking.
So their new machine, the Gold Metal Products Company machine, contributed to the transformation of the cotton candy industry. So it kept it going, basically, because their machine, they improved upon.
Their at-home machines were bubkis.
Yeah, they improved upon the early patented machines, made them actually functional.
Which, is good for a product.
Yeah, totally. Considering cotton candy machines made their debut at circuses and fairs, it makes sense that they're a commonplace treat today. Although now we don't see them sold on sticks commercially. They're in bags. Like if you go to the store, they're in bags. And
you can go to the store and get a bag of cotton candy?
Yeah. You've never seen
what?
That?
No.
Really?
How big is a bag? Are we talking like you go and it's like the size of like a head of lettuce and it's cotton candy in a bag?
Well, it's like flatter.
What?
Yeah, you've never seen that?
No, I mean, I've never really looked. So then what, do you just like open the bag and you just pick it off with your hands?
Yeah, that's how they sell them at circuses now, is just bags. Well, some circuses.
Really? It's not on the little like cone thing anymore? That's the only way I've ever had cotton candy is on the cone.
I know, it's a bummer. Yeah, it's in bags.
That's so weird. Cotton candy in a bag? Let's see, is Google in it? Okay.
Do you see?
Yeah. I see what's going on.
They're
now.
Just in like bags.
This makes sense to me. I don't know why I couldn't picture this, but now I do.
Have you seen that?
I think I have. Yeah. It's just a clear bag full of cotton candy.
Yeah, it's like smash, and it's not as fluffy.
No, it's not. And it really does make it look even more like insulation than it ever did before.
Yeah, boy, doesn't it look like insulation? It's like, and it's dense.
And here's the thing. I mean, I don't know how many of our listeners have ever worked with insulation. That shit sucks. That stuff is bad. Don't let it touch your skin. It's literally...
It's really poisonous.
Well, it's literally like microscopic sharp fiberglass in it. And it can get in your pores, and that's what makes them so itchy. And so if you ever work with that stuff, like if you're doing home improvement and you have to work with that stuff, wear long sleeves, wear gloves, wear a mask. Do not breathe that shit in. It is not good for you. It is really bad, terrifying. Bad stuff.
That sounds horrible. I think it's interesting that it says it popped up with the circus in 1900 because of Thomas Patton. But it also says that Joseph de la Rose Lascaux was the one that called it cotton candy in 1920.
So Joseph de la Dentist was the one who coined the phrase.
The British apparently call cotton candy candy floss.
Still?
I think so, yeah. But in here in America, we started calling it cotton candy in the 1920s, which would support that Joseph the Dentist, the guy from Louisiana, introduced the cotton candy in 1920 versus 1900s. There's like four people involved in this cotton candy.
There's four potential cotton candy daddies. Yeah,
exactly right. So,
gotcha.
According to spunparadise.com.
Is this a cotton candy specific website?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so crazy that there really is a website for everything.
Yep. So according to spunparadise.com, changing preferences and taste has led to the adaptation of cotton candy flavoring over time.
There you go.
The first cotton candy sold at the St. Louis World's Fair was not flavored at all and was plain white in color. For many decades since then, cotton candy was traditionally only pink and blue in color. However, cotton candy has since branched out. Today, cotton candy is made in flavors ranging from dill pickle.
What?
Yeah, that's green in color.
No.
To gingerbread flavor. That's bright purple.
That's at least sugar based. The hell, pickle?
They say at Spun Paradise, they specialize in various unique flavors for every palate. So I think that they can customize for you. They can customize flavors for cotton candy.
Like, who's out there being like, you know, I wish that my cotton candy was sour and salty. Like, what? How do you, it's sugar. It's based in sugar. How do you even?
Well, the dill pickle kind of sounds good because it's like pickle. So it's salty, but then it's sugar.
I mean, I guess maybe if they're going for the sweet pickle taste, but like it just goes to show what kind of unholy nonsense science can produce. Like the fact that we can make dill pickle cotton candy. Like we really are playing with forces we shouldn't be playing with.
100%. 100%. But to answer your initial question, it wasn't a flavor for a while. And for a while, it was just like blue or pink. And then they started to introduce flavors, but not till far, far later when science evolved.
When science caught up.
Crazy flavor science.
I mean, now we're in the crazy flavor science era, you know? I mean, nowadays you can go to a movie. Well, you can't actually, but when you could go to a movie theater.
The before times.
In the before times, you could right after you would like leaving the concessions area, there'd be a little like popcorn flavor bar and there's like dusts that you can throw over. Yeah, I don't know if it's in every place, but I remember seeing this in some movie theaters that it had like, you know, like white cheddar or like just various like flavor dust that you can powder onto your things.
I'll never know that luxury.
Well, when it/if the pandemic ever goes away, I'm sure movies are going to have a boom because people just want to get the F out of their house. So look out for that. See if that's, you know, in your local theater.
Look for
theater.
Dust. Look for popcorn dust.
I honestly think they'd all make it worse. But for me, all movie popcorn needs is like way too many pumps of that fake butter. That's the
good
stuff.
Right, we want our poppies wet.
Give me the wet poppies.
Super wet
and
poppies.
And so, you know, they always do like one, two, because that stuff is so bad for you. It's like motor oil. But I'm like, I want it to get all of it. I don't want the top layer to have the goo. I want the whole thing to be drenched. You know what I'm
saying?
And
they're like, you need to sign this waiver and then we will do it.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, sign away.
All right. I'll sign it twice. Give it to me.
I'm watching Michael Bay's Ninja Turtles 8. I don't give a shit about my well-being.
Oh, God. What a glorious day that'll be.
So good.
Michael Bay's.
Michael Bay's Turtles 8. It's basically like the Fast and the Furious, but with those really big muscle turtles that he made.
But they're driving the cars and doing, and they're drifting.
I mean, honestly, why aren't we combining those franchises? Like, those are
they're both drifting and eating pizza and delivering.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh yeah.
In less than 20 minutes.
Oh, and then they do like a thing where they're driving their turtle truck and they do a big skid and they launch out of the passenger window onto their shell, do a spin move, and then start doing karate. Like, it writes itself.
It does write itself. That's the first 15 minutes. Done.
Hollywood, make those two movies a thing. Fast and the Furious Turtles. Teenage Mutant Fast and Furious Turtle Power. 8.
With abs. Abs aplenty.
That's where the turtle, that all turtles have abs. That's how the Ninja Turtles were made. Because they're like, hey, if turtles have abs, you think they could be ninjas? And then,
they're like, but of course.
You do need abs to be a ninja. I would imagine. Even if they're not like showing, just you're doing so much. If you got strong those, you can do a lot of junk.
So true. All right. So moving on from the cotton candy to candied apples.
Oh, yeah.
Which are often confused with caramel apples, but they're different.
They're different. Candied apples are the red ones.
Candied apples are the red ones. So I read a very thorough article from Food and Wine, which broke down the particulars of these.
Food and Wine had one. Okay, interesting.
They had the history of these candied apples. And it's interesting because candied apples actually were before caramel apples. Candied apples were the thing.
Interesting. Which is surprising because, like, I feel like caramel is a more, like, and maybe it's just because it's more common, but I would have thought that, like, if caramel's been around, you'd think that that would go first. But
so the apple was, I'll explain why, but it was ultimately, it was like a vehicle to showcase the candy. And that was it. It was like, look at this candy on the outside of this apple.
Because it was
candy.
Basically just like a hard liquid, right? Like a liquid that would harden. And they're like, well, what are we dipping? It's like, apple looks nice.
Well, so I'll explain. So the candy apple, not to be confused with our cousins, caramel apples, are closely affiliated and we associate them with like county fairs, circuses, Halloween sometimes, right?
Sure.
But it's a surprise to some that these sticky treats are actually, they were invented for the Christmas season and they were not intended to be eaten on the apple.
You were supposed to lick it off and throw the apple away? Like,
well, so if you've ever eaten a candy apple, it's like fucking impossible because it's so sticky.
Well, it gets all over your face.
And it's
it
like the stickiest shit ever.
And I have a mustache and just, ladies and gents, that would be rough for me. Ice cream is such a nightmare to eat. It's no good.
Eating anything probably is really hard.
It, you know what? Like, I really do like the look of it. I think I have a fine mustache.
You have a great mustache, yeah.
Thank you. It's work. It is work.
Takes a lot of work.
It gets everything. I mean, thank God I mostly drink water, because if I drink anything with sugar in it, it gets in the stash. It gets in there. There's
like a little sprinkle of something, huh?
There's like no way. And I mean, even after I trim it up so it's not so over my lip, like, it still gets in there. It's still, I mean, this is a little gross, but I'm used to it. I was eating buttered toast today with my breakfast, and there's a little bit of butter in my mustache, and I licked it off. I'm like, ooh, salted butter. Mm-hmm.
It's like a welcome mat for all the food that comes
in. Oh, yeah. You get to retaste it for better or worse.
But you don't want to have to be, like, so gingerly biting everything, right? You just want to eat.
And you kind of can't with a candied apple, you know, because of its shape. It's just impossible. Either your chin's going to hit it or your upper lip or your nose. Exactly.
No edge.
You're going to get messy for a while. It's the same thing with caramel apples, which I like. Yeah. I like a little more. Because the candy is too much just straight sugar for me.
Ooh, I don't like candy apples.
The favorite is a caramel apple with like a little bit of chocolate going on too. That's good. And green. You got to go green with them.
Yeah, so green is integral because it has to be tart to counter the sweet. That's a note that has been made for a dipped apple, like a candied or a caramel apple. How the candied apple started was candy maker William W. Kolb is credited with inventing the first candy apple in Newark, New Jersey. In 1908, he was experimenting with red cinnamon candy to sell at Christmas time and decided that apples would be an effective and alluring way to showcase the sweet and spicy candy. You know, so the cinnamon candy he wanted to like show off.
See, the cinnamon angle is interesting. Is that currently in a candied apple? Because I don't.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't had one in so long. It's almost like, what are those like Red Hots? It's like Red Hots, but like
with an apple in the middle.
Yeah. Do you remember Red Hots? They're like those little round
candies. I haven't had them, but I do remember them.
It's like the in liquid form. It's that's what that is. I think ultimately,
yeah, I haven't had one in just like so long.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the cinnamon is that hot, this that spicy, that cinnamon candy that he had, but it's like of that, it's like cinnamon flavor candy.
Yeah.
So he had this spicy cinnamon candy, put the apples on sticks, dipped them into the red glaze, and then displayed him in his shop window, his confection window.
I mean, it's a good look. He was right about that.
He's trying to entice customers walking by, and he has these really shiny red apples. And so instead of selling the red hot candies, he ends up selling the apples themselves for 5 cents to like passerbys that see the display and they like look good. And they're on apples, which are edible. It's like, obviously they're going to want to eat it, right?
Yeah, easy enough.
So he realizes that the fruit could be popular in their own right, begins churning them out, quickly becomes a crowd favorite at circuses and the Jersey Shore and so on. He sells the first batch for 5 cents each. Later, he continues to sell thousands yearly. And, you know, candied apples become like a sugary craze. He continues to accommodate thousands of customers because they just want these candied apples.
Gotta get them. Can't have enough.
Yeah, they are being sold on the Jersey Shore, at circuses, across the country. This is all according to the Newark News in 1948. How candy apples are made is they're made by coating an apple with a layer of sugary glaze heated in a copper kettle to a hard cracking stage. The most common sugar coating is made from sugar, corn syrup, water, cinnamon, and red food coloring.
I bet you could make a pretty good one if you literally just melted a Jolly Rancher down and dipped an apple in it and then let it cool.
So his idea was just like, oh, I'm going to showcase these red hot candies on these apples. And then people are like, I want to eat it on the apple. And he's like, okay.
Yeah, they're like, don't show me that if I can't eat it. Yeah,
which is like, duh, they're going to eat it on the apple, obviously. Yeah,
what did you think? They were just going to lick it and throw the apple, which is food, away?
Like, yeah, very wasteful.
Yeah, well, just like put them on a freaking brick then, man. Like, what? Why? Yeah,
right? Or just put it on the stick.
Yeah. It's like lollipops exist, dude. Like, you don't need.
Yeah, really. Lollipop. Come on, get it together.
Yeah.
So they candy apples also became fashionable to give out to trick-or-treaters during Halloween in the early 1900s.
Oh, boy, did they stick up those pillowcases, though.
Oh, gross. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they were, well, I think maybe they're wrapped up.
That makes more sense.
So, and they remained that way, like remained pretty popular for that holiday until the 1960s and 70s when urban legends about hidden needles and razor blades in them.
Oh, I remember that. Started,
yeah. And then they were like cast out of favor for sure.
Well, that was a big thing when I was a little kid, that like along the same time as like the DARE program that would come in and they'd be like, you got to watch out for razor blades and needles. And it's like, what?
Yeah, they're like, huh?
You got to wonder how many times did that ever actually happen,
right?
That it became a thing that they had to worry kids about. They're like, I mean, I get it. It's like if there's a wrapped candy thing that is open, like, yeah, maybe just chuck that one aside. But that it is a bummer that like a person can't be like, oh, I'm going to make my famous cookies and give those out. You know what I mean? It's like, it's kind of lame. And it's like, you really wonder, like, I don't know the statistics at all, but I'm really curious how that like razor blade needle thing even came up. Like, did that happen one time in one neighborhood? Cause like,
right.
What a weird, random, like there's no motivation other than to like fuck with people. You know what I mean?
It's yeah.
Like, that's the sociopath shit that like happens once in a blue moon. You know what I mean? Like,
it's some murdery shit.
It's murdery shit, but it's also like, it's murdery shit that the murderer doesn't see at all.
It's just in the news. It's
like, I feel like most murderers want to be there for the murdering. I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
they want to murder.
True crime makes me think they want to be there for it. So it's really weird to do this passive murder.
Yeah, passive murder. I'm curious as well. We'll have to look it up. The name Candy Apple Red has kind of infiltrated a lot of colors.
Yeah, now everybody wants that color for their car.
Yeah, in like pop culture. So like nail polishes, lipsticks, cars, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
It's a popular trendy color. So if you say candy apple red, it's like, ooh, that's like a hot color.
It's like a bright fun red.
Yeah, it's a fun red. It's a poppy red. So there are variations of candied apples, which are of course caramel apples, which is a variation.
I mean, that's the better stuff right there.
Right. So I think once candied apples were introduced, people are like, oh, we can dip these in anything.
Yeah, we just put, yeah, exactly. It's like chocolate, caramel, whatever.
So than caramel apples started. Caramel apples are often called taffy apples. And then additionally, ingredients such as peanuts or other stuff are applied to that. And then chocolate apples. So these include both caramel apples dipped in chocolate and then chocolate-coated apples with no caramel, or chocolate and chocolate caramels.
Oh, the chocolate and caramel is so good. That's my favorite. If I'm going to eat a candied apple of any type, that's the one
I want. Yeah, and then they have like white chocolate, milk chocolate, sprinkles,
candy bits. It's like eating an apple with a Snickers bar on top of it.
So good. One other apple variation is jelly apples.
What?
So this type of candy apple is sold in Coney Island, allegedly. So jelly apples differ from the regular candy apples in that the candy coating is softer and cherry flavored rather than the cinnamon flavor.
It's almost like a gummy.
Yeah, it's just a little softer. It's not hard on the side and it's cherry.
The word jelly sounds gross.
Gross.
Yeah.
Way grosser. Like rebrand.
Candied apple is a good name. Jelly apple is like, I don't think I want that.
Yeah, right? Just candy apple, cherry flavor. So that's some common circus foods found at or affiliated with circus. So now for some circus themed foods.
Ooh.
Generally not served within the confines of a circus, but using the circus as their marketing or branding.
The aesthetic.
Yes. So of course, right out of the gate, animal crackers.
Oh, of course. I mean, it's right on that box.
Right. And namely Barnum's animal crackers. Like it's on the name.
They're using his good name. I mean, that was the good stuff. Like at least like sales wise, like the marketing of it was great. Just that classic looking box with the like, you know, animals in the like train car basically. But they were great. They like the little box, it had like a string on top of it that mm-hmm. you just hold it with. Like it yeah, was so it,
this,
good.
This box has a handle, but you're right.
Yeah, this it is like the more modern version. Source Correct. Of calcium, get out of here.
Right. Get out. And so Barnum's animal crackers have been around forever, you know,
yeah.
before, since like the early 1900s. It's like a red box. Mm-hmm. It looks like a chooch car graphic, you know, with animals in like cages, but they look like they're like mobile cages that you would have.
But
on
they're
it.
Like happy cages.
Yeah, they're like happy cages.
Then I was like, eat
but
us.
They look like they're transportation cages for that you would put on a train.
Yeah,
car,
I mean,
right?
you can't just let them skidoot about on the train. They'd get off into a weird part of the country and cause a ruckus. So
right. So there's a lot of aspects about these animal crackers that I think are really interesting. And I read a couple articles, one from a Mental Floss article from 2016. So basically, animal crackers or animal-shaped biscuits, as they're known in the UK, have been around as early as like early 1800s. In this 1870s publication called Secrets of the Bakers and Confectioners, it's like this animal crackers recipe. This animal crackers or biscuits was so popular in the UK that it like moved over to America. America wanted the same thing, these animal biscuits. So American businesses like Stafford's Biscuit Company, which still exists today, made their first animal crackers in 1871 in York, Pennsylvania. The custom of shaping cookies to resemble animals began around the 6th or 7th century from the Yule tribe, allegedly. So for the Yule tribe, it was common to sacrifice animals to the gods during the Jule Fest ceremonies in hope that such offerings would bring a mild winter and an early spring. However, poor people who could not afford to kill any of their animals gave token sacrifices in the form of animal-shaped breads and cookies.
What a cool origin story for animal crackers. I would never have thought that, like, animal crackers had such, like, a metal, like, origin story.
Right? Like, we can't sacrifice our animals because we need to use them or eat them, so we're going to make crackers.
So we'll basically make a voodoo doll token. Yeah, it's like we're going to make something that represents the animal.
Yeah,
and then we'll sacrifice that. That's awesome. That is very cool. It also goes to show you, though, I mean, like, this isn't why they were animal-shaped, but it goes to show you that, like, you can make anything way more interesting by just using, like, a cookie cutter. Like the right shape,
that's so
you know?
True. So much more interesting to eat.
Because otherwise, animal crackers, like the modern version, are like a pretty whatever, depending on where you get them. It's just like an okay cookie. Like if it just came in like a disc, like a Nilla wafer, you'd be like, yeah, okay, whatever. But the fact that someone decided to make it a shape, you're like, oh,
right.
Fine.
So funny. So So there's many manufacturers of animal crackers. The term animal crackers, quote, refers to the type of snack, not the particular brand. And in fact, there's several U.S. manufacturers that produce the treats because it became popular from the U.K., came over to America. The Stafford's Biscuit Company started it in 1871, as I said. And they're using their same recipe that they started back then. Today, more than 40 million packages of animal crackers are sold each year around the world and are exported to 17 countries. Nabisco remains the most popular.
Top dog. I mean, they're king of the cookie market in America.
Of course. In 1902, Nabisco began selling what they call Barnum's animal crackers. Now, it's obviously named after the greatest showman, Mr. P.P.
R.P.T., Mr. Hugh P.T. Jackman.
So P.T. Barnum had these circus-themed crackers. This is after he's passed away, though, because he dies in 1891. This is introduced in 1902.
Before he's ever seen an animal cracker.
Right. And I think James Bailey is on the verge of passing away. He passes away in like 1905.
It's like, name the cracker after Barnum. And then,
right. These circus-themed crackers were the first to be sold in a small snack-size package before...
Snack pack.
Like a snack pack, right. And before all crackers were sold in bulk, in like in a barrel.
I only buy my crackers in bulk. I want a pillowcase full of crackers.
Which this article says is where the term cracker barrel comes from.
Oh.
I don't know if that's true, but I hope so.
A barrel full of crackers. I would like one barrel full of crackers, please.
I think that's so funny.
What crackers would you like? Cheez-Its.
So meanwhile, Barnum, arguably the most renowned promoter in history, my God.
Sure.
He wasn't in on the box that bore his name up because he was not alive. But to this day, Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey don't get any cut or licensing fee.
Interesting.
Which I don't know how that's legal.
Yeah. Maybe he didn't have like an estate set up to like, you know, do anything with his name like people have now. But that is weird that there's not, that they can just use his likeness.
Right.
And then, I mean, it's kind of like what we were talking about on the Patreon episode of Greatest Showman. It was like, did his estate have to sign off for this kind of stuff? Or did they,
right.
Do they just get to do it? Like, was that before those type of laws? Like, did he pass away before those type of laws came in? And then he was just kind of
right.
Like...
Like, you can use likenesses and that's fine.
It's interesting to think about because clearly it's been happening even before the Hugh Jackman movie. Mm-hmm.
Or maybe because 1902 is when it started and that was like a weird time when James Bailey was near death. And also then they sold to Ringling during that time. So maybe it was like a weird time where they're like, well, give us some money. You could put his name on there.
Yeah.
And we'll move on.
And then he died. And then they were like, well, we got the okay. So we're just going to use that.
And maybe it was like a buyout, you know, where they're like, oh, give us 10 grand or something. And which was a lot of money.
Yeah. And they're like, yes.
And now it's like 120 years later and they're still selling these.
To the cookie gods, that's nothing.
Yeah. Really? I mean, like, who knew that these animal crackers would be around for so fucking long?
Right.
The Barnum's crackers were actually, like, the carton that it came in was intended as a Christmas ornament because the string on there. So I think that was part like to hang.
That's cute.
Around 1889 in England, animal crackers were manufactured as a marketing promotions for popular entertainment. So additions to the circus theme in 1902, animal crackers boxes designed for Barnum's animals were also designed for Christmas season. So they had like Christmas season boxes.
Well, it's interesting at how these like delivery methods were invent, like the same thing with the apple, were like initially thought of as something else. It's like,
right.
Who was like, okay, I'm going to hang a box of cookies on my Christmas tree.
Right. Or like, they used to decorate trees with food all the time though, like popcorn.
Popcorn, you could string through. That one... But, like, it just seems, I mean, I don't know. Maybe they're, like, it's kind of like the equivalent of, like, cereal with a toy in it. It's, like, the box is also an ornament.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Double selling point. Yeah. So, the familiar circus train package and the handle on the top has been in play since Nabisco began manufacturing more than over 100 years ago and originally conceived as a Christmas gift turn ornament. You eat the stuff and then you...
You eat it, you hang it, you move on.
So the package was meant to be hung on the Christmas tree by its string. And at the time, boxes of Barnum's animals, crackers would cost about 5 cents a pop.
Pretty good.
So another fun fact is the crackers are kept in a 300-foot-long oven for about 4 minutes. which means that they're baked at a rate of 12,000 cookies per minute.
That's a lot. I'm just picturing a giant pizza oven.
Yeah, right? That's what I'm picturing too.
And they just sheet in conveyor a huge amount.
So the latest animal edition, according to this article in 2016, was chosen by popular vote to commemorate the 100th anniversary of their crackers. Nabisco sponsored a Name Our Next Animal contest in 2002. Mm-hmm. And the people voted, and they voted for a cuddly koala bear, which beat out the other contenders, which were a penguin, a walrus, and a cobra as the other contenders to eat.
Cobra's a funny one. The idea.
Which is how would you make that?
Like, it just seems weird to be like, yeah, let's get a snake. I want to eat a snake. I mean, I guess they're all weird, but penguin, I feel like, I feel like you'd see the most, you know? I'm kind of surprised that penguin didn't win.
I'm sure it was a close second. So there's been 54 animals reimagined as crackers.
That's a lot more than I thought. I thought it'd be like 12. I didn't even think there's that many animals.
Nabisco's Barnum's crackers can claim to have developed the most animals of any brand of animal crackers, with 37 different creatures over the years. And they've also had variations of they've had special editions, I think. So, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah, SpongeBob was there for a while.
Well, they had a marine edition. Today, a 2-ounce box of Barnum's contains 22 crackers featuring 19 different animals.
That's a good amount of animals.
Pretty good, right? The appearance of the animals has definitely changed over time.
They have a lot more muscles now.
So until 1958, the animal shapes were stamped from a dough sheet by cookie cutters, which produced outlines that were, basic at best. They're pretty basic. Mm-hmm. They upgraded, and then the cookies became more distinct with engraved designs that revealed much more detail. And they use those today.
I remember those ones weirdly enough, I thought the ones that tasted better were the ones with the worst design. Like the ones that come in the drum, the really simple, dumb looking ones. I liked, they have a really rounded edges. I liked the taste of those more than the ones that came in the nice box and had the really intricate designs.
Maybe because they were more hands-on, made with love, and not like...
Could be.
Maybe. Because it sounds like they were using more of a machine that had better engraving, but it was more of a process factory machine.
I mean, I do think though that the drum of animal crackers I'm talking about could not have been made with love.
I know exactly the one you're talking
about.
Yeah,
it's the cheaper one, but I think it tastes better.
That is a barrel of crackers.
It is. And it's good.
It is good. This is a fun fact. The monkey animal has been the only animal to have worn clothes. He has clothes on, I guess, which who would fucking know?
It's what he's the monkeys need pants, this is too vulgar, and what are you talking about?
But it
about?
Appears that he has pants, whereas the rest of the animals don't have clothes, but he has pants.
It's
on.
What are you afraid that he's gonna have his monkey doink out? Just don't.
So weird, right?
Ken dolls don't have doinks either, dude. Just don't worry about it.
But it's a hot topic of discussion on the internet for years, why he has pants on.
I wonder
on.
If religious groups are the monkeys must have pants. They're poisoning the children's minds. It's they're animals. They don't need. It's either put all fun outfits on them or just let them be animals.
So in a 2018 article from the New York Times, they are discussing about the redesigning of the box. And again, there's a number of manufacturers that make the animal crackers, but Nabisco is the most popular. They started in 1902, and it had a menagerie of animals just like P.T., and their colorful box, which looked like a circus car filled with animals with the string on top. But over the past two decades, the most recent two decades, Nabisco has issued several limited editions of Barnum's animal boxes that show creatures outside of the cages, like its marine animal collection or the brand's collaboration with a fashion designer, Lily Pulitzer, which raised money for tiger conservation. And this is according to reports by Deanne Durbin of the Associated Press. But until the recent redesign, these changes were just temporary changes. They were just limited.
When you said that it was in collaboration with a designer, I was are they wearing clothes? is this fashion animal crackers? Okay, that sounds like a good cause.
Yeah, they are just a collab because they were just raising money for the tiger conservation thing. And then the other one was just...
Like, tigers are way too cold. This organization raises money for sweaters for tigers. Yeah,
and I remember seeing the marine animal ones, actually. Do you ever remember seeing that?
I don't think I do.
I remember seeing a box where it was like, sea animals. And you're like, okay. Sharks,
whales, octopus.
According to this 2018 New York Times article, the new box for Barnum's Animals perfectly reflects, this is a quote from PETA, the new box for Barnum's Animals perfectly reflects that our society no longer tolerates caging and chaining exotic animals for the circus shows. So they are redesigning the box, or have redesigned them, for the animals to not be in cages anymore. They are free. They're not in their cage.
I mean, that makes sense. It's a better look. Although PETA, I'm always suspicious with them.
I mean, right. So another quote from PETA is, a redesign of the crackers packaging, which will make its debut in stores this week, this is from 2018, no longer shows the animals in cages. Instead, a zebra, a lion, an elephant, a giraffe, and a gorilla can be seen walking across the savanna with tufts of grass on the ground and trees in the distance. Good.
It's such a weird thing for PETA to be all up about. Yeah. Because, like, yeah. The thing is, like, animal rights is important, but yes, the way that PETA goes about it is the weirdest way possible almost all the time. Like, there's a billboard in Los Angeles, like a PETA billboard, and it has, like, the eye of a chicken, and it has something, some line about how, like, you know, I think too, or like, I also have feelings. And you're like, of all the animals, you picked a chicken. A chicken has the most nonsense. I have no idea what's going on. Look in my eyes. Of all, pick an ape, pick a dog, pick something that has feelings in its eyes that you can tell. And then that would work. But they picked the one thing that truly looks like it has no concept of what's going on at all times ever. It's like, they're so bad at what they do.
Wow. Thanks to a push from PETA, Barnum's animals have been freed from captivity. So this is a...
The crackers are free of their drawn captivity.
This is according to Matthew Hagg, reporting from the New York Times. So though they have a different look on the outside, the snacks inside the Barnum's animal box still have the same great taste, according to the red lettering on the new design. So they still have the same great taste, but they are different box, freed animals, and then you can still continue to have fun swallowing these animals one by one.
<You know? laughs> What a weird.
Very strange. So
for those of you kids who like swallowing the animals crackers whole and letting it dissolve in your throat, you can still do that.
Yeah. Today, Barnum's animal crackers are still sold, and its box design became memorable worldwide. Its basic ingredients are flour, sugar, shortening, corn flour, whey solids. What is that?
Yeah. What?
Salt.
Totally solid.
leavening and oil of lemon. So.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know what's going on. It sounds like a lot of stuff, and I don't know how it gets the taste that it gets.
So a variation of these animal crackers, which I totally forgot, was the Mother's Circus Animals.
What?
The pink and white frosted animal crackers.
Oh, I don't remember these. I'm going to Google them.
Yeah, Google if you want. They're the circus animal ones.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. I don't think I've had these.
You've never had them? They're pink and white with sprinkles. And they have
sprinkles, yeah. Yeah, I definitely didn't have these.
So Mother's is like a brand. And then the Circus Animals is like one of the cookies that this company makes. And I remember, like, my friends had these all the time growing up, like in their lunches.
Yeah.
And I always wanted them. And then I remember eating them in my 20s, and I'm like, these are fucking gross.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're also good, but they're gross, but they're good. Because they're like waxy and sugary, but also...
they look like the kind of thing where if you like frosting, you will like these. If you don't like frosting, maybe not.
Yeah, they're just like sugary, waxy. I don't know. They're good, but they're also weird. If
you wish that you could eat the outside of a Baby Bell, you would like these.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, you can eat it. When you eat it, you're like, this is good. But also, like, something is not edible in here. You know what I mean?
There are trace amounts of plastic.
Exactly. 100%. But they look so fun.
My stomach feels hard afterwards.
It's so weird. Should that be happening? Yeah, something is wrong in here. So it's a different brand of animal crackers, and obviously, like, a fun one, but it's like a variation of. And a little laxy. So, but this company, Mother's, they started in 1914, and they had a bakery in Oakland and then a sister factory in Michigan. They declared bankruptcy in 2008, but then were acquired by Kellogg, and along with all of their recipes in 2008. And then they had all of their stuff. Well, not all of their stuff, but they were back on shelves on the West Coast.
Back in the business, baby.
So Kellogg got all their stuff, got them back on the shelves. On May 14th.
And then they went bankrupt again.
No, they're still around, but they put them back on the shelves May 14th, 2009, which was Mother's Day.
Oh, Kellogg's. How cute.
Yeah, right? So I thought that was interesting. And I could not figure out the shapes. I mean, you cannot fucking tell any of the shapes.
No, the frosting really makes it so, like, you really have, like, you're like, okay, this is a bear or cat. Who knows? Like, this is a chimp or a kangaroo. Yeah. I don't know.
But Mother's doesn't come in like a snack size. It's just like a giant bag. I think it's interesting though that Barnum's cookies were like one of the first like snack size things.
And it makes sense, you know?
It's just like so cool though. They're like, you want a to-go snack?
It's almost surprising that he didn't have anything to do with it, you know? Because that does seem like the kind of thing.
Yeah, they're probably like, do you want to do this? And he was like, okay, my name's on it.
That's easy.
Yeah. But he didn't get any licensing. I just can't. Nope. I mean,
he doesn't need the money, but it is still crooked.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. He's like, it doubles for an ornament. Great. Give me some money.
Yeah, that's some kind of weird outside the box. Ha-ha,
if people see my name, I love it. I love it. I mean, it is advertising forever. So I think that's interesting.
Sure. Yeah. It's like, oh, there's, because that is the thing. You'd see those there and you'd be like, oh, yeah, the circus. You know what I mean? Like, less.
Maybe
so
he
now,
talked somebody into it and was just like, why don't you call it me?
It does sound like the kind of thing he would do.
They are animals, and I have a lot of those.
And so. They're like, we could call it, name it after Hagenbeck. He's like, no. He's got the ice cream.
No. Your kids can go to the circus forever if you name it after me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just no money, I wonder. So on to some cereals, some fun cereals.
Cereal.
Chris has showed me this. Cereal. Circus Fun cereal is what it's called.
Circus Fun, you say? Not Circus Puffs or Circus O's, but Circus Fun.
No, Circus Fun, and it is. So I'm going to show you.
I bet you it's heavily marshmallow based.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was another thing when I was a kid. All cereals that weren't like a brand you heard of.
Yeah.
It was like they would get by because they had marshmallows, which cereal marshmallows are like not the same thing.
Yeah, what are they?
As a marshmallow. Who knows what they are?
They're like fruity little
things. These look weird.
Things.
They're like, they've got puff balls and then little animal shapes, which I don't know if the animals are supposed to
those
be
those are marshmallows.
Oh, they are. Okay.
Yeah. So it's like the sugariest things.
Of course.
Possibly.
I mean, when in doubt with cereal, that's what you go for. It's just the more sugar. Man, I haven't had cereal in forever.
Regular cereal?
Just any cereal. I haven't eaten cereal in a long, long, long time. In like years.
You should try it.
I mean, I'm...
Years?
Years, yeah. I mean, because the breakfast that I've had, I've streamlined my breakfast.
Eggs.
I have two eggs, either scrambled or over easy. And then I have two pieces of toast, salted butter, and a cup of black coffee. And I've been adding and some fruit. Because that's just so much starch. it's just like butter, bread, and eggs and stuff, which are amazing. But I'm like, I'm going to add a little bit of fruit in here. I'm also, like I said a million times on this program at this point, like I'm not really interested in sugar most of the time. Like I like chocolate in a dessert fashion, but otherwise I'm pretty much all savory all day.
I could eat sweets for always. So this Circus Fun cereal is a General Mills product.
Of course it is.
It was introduced in 1986, but it only was on shelves for a couple years. So it's described on the box as a crispy, sweetened, fruit-flavored cereal with animal-shaped marshmallows. So the initial cereal pieces were horses, hoops, balls, bears, elephants, and lions. Orange tiger marshmallows were later added.
I like that hoops made the fucking cut. Like, what?
Sounds like fucking, it does sound fun. It sounds like circus fucking fun to me.
I mean, it seems like what you would do if you were making a circus-themed cereal. Like, it's like, yeah, make the animals, you know, cotton candy. Or make like a clown head out of, you know, it, or like cotton candy balls. That would be a good idea, right? To throw in there. Or like it turns your milk pink. That would be a good, very processed thing.
I mean, it has to turn your milk pink for sure. I got a lot of this information from MrBreakfast.com.
That's a fun website name.
It's like all about old cereals. So another box gave this description: a fun fruit flavored way to start the day. Breakfast is a circus. An exciting parade of colorful marshmallow circus animals. Yellow lions, purple horses, blue bears, green elephants, crunch speckled balls that almost bounce on milk, and red crunchy hoops. Just keeps changing.
Yeah, they're all over the place.
Yeah, sounds nuts. But wow, that's just like, sounds very fun. It sounds like Fruit Loops, but with animal shapes and then Lucky Charms.
Yeah.
Kind of. It sounds fucking great.
I'm kind of surprised that they went the fruit angle, because fruit does not, I don't think of fruit when I think the circus. I feel like they should have did small pink balls for cotton candy, you know, cotton candy flavored puffs, and then marshmallow animals or clowns would be good.
Well, there is another cereal.
Oh.
Called Kaboom.
That sounds familiar.
And that is kind of like a clown theme. Kaboom was a vitamin fortified circus themed breakfast cereal.
So it's healthy.
Yeah. Produced by General Mills also, which contained oat cereal bits shaped like smiling clown faces with marshmallow bears, lions, and elephants and stars. Its mascot was a smiling circus clown. It originated in 1969. And it was a breakfast cereal, obviously, in the 1970s and 80s. And it was around and available until 2010. And then it was discontinued by General Mills. So I'll send you a picture of that. And there's a commercial for it that I'll post a link, because it's just very funny.
I'm Googling it and looking at some of them. These kind of look very Fruit Loopy, although... The actual, I'm curious about the image you're going to send me, because the corn or oat based, like the little pieces, they're haunting looking. They look like just like sad, like happy that they're dying pumpkins. Like they all look like pumpkins 2 days after Halloween when they start to like curl in and like, and they still have the scary face on. They're like, oh.
Yeah.
Vitamin and iron cereal. Also, the angle that everyone is like, tries to be like part of a balanced breakfast. It's like, this is a bowl of sugar. It's a bowl of sugar. If you want to eat that, that is your business. Eat it. But don't you try to pretend to me that this is in any way a healthy way to start the day.
So look at this link, and that's the commercial.
Let's see what it is.
Is it Kaboom or
no?
Is it circus
they're
fun?
They're claymation walking. Oh my goodness.
Oh no, it's circus fun.
Oh my goodness. Yes, circus. Oh my goodness.
Many marshmallow animals. Circus fun, a spectacular part of this complete breakfast.
It's also funny when they say a spectacular part of this breakfast, the thing that they show you is just like a bowl of cereal and like a flapjack style bread tower made with a lot of butter on top. It's like, oh my god, like what a ridiculous heavy way to start your day. Also, Kaboom, of the two of them, Kaboom seems so much more simple. You know, it's like, right, here's one uniform base thing, and then there's marshmallows. It's kind of like the Lucky Charms style of like, they've got some base thing, and then peppered in are shapes of marshmallows. Where Circus Fun is like all over the place. They're like, there's some hoops, and there's a clown, and there's some animals, and there's some. It's just like it's a little too all over the place for me. I like my cereal aesthetics simple,
very simple. Here, I'm gonna send you.
Keep it simple.
Here we go. That's Kaboom.
Oh, this is real old style.
Vitamin cereal. Yeah, vitamin cereal.
Vitamin cereal.
You need
Kaboom. Oh my god. This cereal made me strong.
Yikes.
Sugar sweet. Mm-mm. Oh my goodness.
Kaboom. Kaboom.
How many times can they say kaboom?
Yeah, there's a lot of explosions. They're like, maybe we don't have so many explosions.
Let's get something that kids are gonna scream in their house.
Yeah, right.
When they get it.
After they've eaten all the sugar cereal, they're kaboom.
I mean, there's some things that are like absolutely great marketing ploys that I'm sure drive parents insane.
Oh my God.
Getting things that your kids to scream or repeat, it's like, oh my God, fine, we will go to like Disneyland or whatever it is that you're screaming about. But it's like,
oh my God.
Yeah, I assume when parents see stuff like that, they're like, oh my God, please let my child not see this.
So I read the Kaboom cereal box is like, have you watched Kill Bill?
That movie? Yes.
I've only watched it like once or twice. Sorry, everybody. But I guess that there is, what's the character? Farida, whatever. She has a gun in this Kaboom box.
Oh, well, that's a fun combo.
And she pulls a gun out to kill the bride out of this Kaboom box, apparently. That's like of note. But
the Kill Bill 1 I've seen far less than Kill Bill 2 because there was a brief time in my life where I was working on a television show in the Bahamas, which sounds more fun than it was.
Wow.
But I was working like 12-hour days, 6 days a week. So like it was...
It always sounds more fun.
I was exhausted every day. And they didn't have as many channels in my hotel, but one they did, I think it was like AMC or something. Mm-hmm. And that like the 2 months I was there, they were just it was like action month. And they would just show like five movies on repeat.
Yeah.
And I would just watch, it was like Kill Bill 2, Casino Royale, Gladiator, and something else. And so it was just like those movies were always on.
Real wind down kind of films.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I watched Kill Bill 2 so many times because of all those, I liked Kill Bill. I mean, I think I like Kill Bill 2 more than Kill Bill 1. But and I of all the Tarantinis, I think the Kill Bills are my favorite.
Tarantinis. So the last and final is our Circus Peanuts. The beloved.
But these are the like marshmallowy ones we're talking, right?
These are the marshmallows. Well,
these
right,
are a thing that I straight up didn't know existed until a couple years ago. When people would say, say circus peanuts, I would assume they meant like actual from the earth peanuts. And right. Then when I found out what this was, I was like, what? This is like a peep. What is this?
It's so weird. So I'm going to send you some pictures of these because...
These like amalgamations of like sugar and like foam.
Yeah.
There you go. History circus peanut. There's a woman with gloves
making
on.
Making them,
like,
right?
Yeah. Which they just look like little fingers.
They do look like little fingers. It's so crazy. Here's a bag of them. There's a company that's really well known for producing them. Spanglers.
Spangler?
Yeah.
Spanglers. 10% more free? What kind of weirdo way of saying 10% cheaper?
I need
is
more
that?
Of these circus peanuts.
It's 10% more free. Free of major allergens.
Spanglers is known for making these circus peanuts. They're fat-free, gluten-free, free of common allergens.
Fat-free. Whenever people are like, it doesn't have fat in it, it's like, yeah, it has nonsense made up like sugar fluff. It doesn't matter that it doesn't have fat in
it. So marshmallow circus peanuts were invented in the 1800s and have been produced by many confectionery manufacturers over the years. But the first Spangler candy circus peanut recipe was developed on March 12th, 1941. During the war, circus peanut slurry was sold in jars as a sugar replacement since sugar was rationed. So it's like fluff.
Yeah, marshmallow fluff. Yeah, yeah.
Sugar fluff. Gross. Spangler's peanuts are the most popular and iconic, made with their, you know, secret recipe or whatever, but it's just like fluff.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it. They're unholy chemical amalgamation that they got from the devil himself.
So they're orange, they're shaped like peanuts, but they're marshmallows. And get this, they're banana flavor.
I was going to ask what flavor they were, and that's not the answer that I thought was going to come up.
Me neither. Me fucking neither.
Because, like, I've never actually had these, and I was going to ask what makes them different than just, like, a shaped marshmallow, which maybe that is what they are.
Yeah.
But banana flavored? Like, what kind of weirdo all over the place?
I thought they were going to be, like, peanut butter or something.
Yeah. Banana. Like, what have anything to do with peanuts at all?
So,
like,
I don't know if other ones are... I don't know if other ones are flavored differently.
Such
but...
a weird... And they're the ones that stick? What kind of nonsense is
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I mean, there's other brands.
I mean, look, maybe I have to try it, but I don't want to.
Well, we're going to... You know we're going to.
Yeah, so... I know we will eventually. And if you want to hear us to sample those in real time, you got to join the Patreon.
You sure do. So there's a USA Today article that was posted on this confectioner's website. It was the Spangler Circus Peanuts website, really. But they published an article, or they had an article written about them, and they put this on their website, which was on usatoday.com from 2006. And so they interview them in Ohio. So I'll read some bits from that. It says, Steve Kerr pulls apart the freshly made circus peanut and presses his thumb into the spongy orange center. Not too moist or too rigid, just right. It's all about feel, he says.
I'm frowning right now.
He isn't tempted to taste it, though.
Yeah, of course not.
Yeah, right. I'm not a big fan, admits Kerr, vice president of operations for Spangler Candy.
It's good for you, idiots.
Yeah, one of the few remaining makers of circus peanuts. The marshmallow confection is as controversial as it gets when it comes to candy. What makes the circus peanut so intriguing and sparks debate among candy connoisseurs is that the treat is a mystery on many levels. Quote.
Like what it is or is made from. Exactly. Yeah.
People can't wrap their brains around why it's sweet and really, really confused by the flavor, says Beth Kimmerly, author of The Candy, The Sweet History. What a cool book.
Yeah.
So though they are orange and look like a peanut, they taste like banana. So weird. I can't.
Which also, like, it's such a weird choice. Like, look, if you're not going to make it be peanut flavored, whatever, that's your prerogative. Why on God's green earth did you pick banana flavor? It's the flavor that everyone avoids with fruit candies because it doesn't translate.
You are so right. That's so true. People that like bananas or banana flavored things fucking will say, and I know a ton of people that were like, ooh, but artificial banana is gross.
Yeah, because it doesn't translate well. It's just one of those things. It's the same reason that, like, with apple, you only really ever get green apple, because really what they're synthesizing is the tartness, because you can't really get that. It's a little too subtle, and you can't quite get it.
You're right.
And bananas, what a weird, weird choice. Make them, if they taste it, what? Cotton candy, like, da-doy. Like, what? Why would you pick
any other flavor?
It's such a weird choice.
So they're chewier than a traditional marshmallow. Even those who like circus peanuts can't agree whether they're better soft and fresh or stale and hard after sitting out for a week. Gross. That's so gross.
What the hell? I really do wonder how much like crossover there is between people who like circus peanuts and people who like
boiled peanuts,
candy corn.
Oh yeah, no,
because candy corn is one of those things that like is very like a lot of people are like no, like get the they taste like
candy
wax.
Corn is fucking gross.
I agree, but we both have a friend who likes candy corn.
Who? I'll bleep their name out.
Yeah, you could bleep their name out, but no, pro candy corn. And I was always like,
has he tried other food?
Of all people, goes to like restaurants and tries new places more than almost anyone I know.
He has such a refined taste. I feel
it's so weird to me that, but I mean, look, this is just more proof that people really contain multitudes.
That's true. There's so many levels. People are like onions. It's true.
That's just the wonder of the human being, but it's such a weird one. And I do wonder, like, cause there are certain candies that are just like, this is like just made in some factory in a weird like setting that most people are not into, but there's like a cult following of that just keeps it around forever. Cause I can't imagine your average candy goer is like circus peanuts. You know what I mean? Like it's gotta be like a cult following.
This woman, Beth Kimmerly, the author of The Candy, The Sweet History, says, quote, break out a bag anywhere and you'll get a debate going.
True. I mean, look at what's happening, and neither of us have even had
vehement,
it.
Like, oh man. She prefers them factory fresh and once served slices at a cocktail party where guests were adding them to crackers and prosciutto.
What the fuck? What?
Yeah.
Who's ruining prosciutto?
Oh, this
with
woman.
Circus peanuts. Get out. Although, little fun little tidbit. If you say, you're having a little, once the pandemic's over and we can have people over again, and you want to have a little bit of like a cocktail thing, you know, with some like little treats and some drinks, not necessarily dinner, a great easy one to do that sounds a little weird, but once you eat it, you're like, no, this is real good, is you get prosciutto or some similar really thin sliced, like kind of pork product, but just go with prosciutto because you can't miss. And you wrap little pieces of melon. And I'm talking like cantaloupe or honeydew. And you put a little toothpick through it, eat them all at once. I remember the first time I saw that somewhere, I was like, that seems like it wouldn't be good. And then you eat it and you're like, this is real good.
I've heard that. Yeah, because the salt kind of counterbalances it.
Salt
and all that.
Sweet. I mean, that was ended up being a thing where, like, if I was doing, like, a friend's, like, Easter or something like that, I needed to bring something, that's a really easy, like, appetizer-y thing to bring.
Totally. It's like, it's not the same thing, but it's like figs and bacon. Similar, though.
Yeah, it's kind of, because it's, like, it's the sweetness of the fruit with the kind of, like, savory saltiness of the smoked meat. It works. Give it a try.
This woman, Beth Kimberly, says, it's right up there with black licorice, these circus peanuts. I agree.
Oh, which is another thing that, like, I just don't. My dad likes licorice, and I
black licorice?
Not, I think so.
Ugh, black licorice is disgusting.
It doesn't, like, it's not like he eats it regularly, but I remember him, like, mentioning that.
It's funny you mentioned Peeps, because it mentions in this article, like, circus peanuts have become a cult item, much like Peeps.
Yeah.
The marshmallow chicks and bunnies, the Peeps, are self-described candy addict who wrote Candy Freak. This guy, Steve Almond, has a memoir that chronicles candy making in America, and he likens these peanuts to Peeps. He calls them, quote, a mixture of fascination and disgust. It's a completely baffling candy, these circus peanuts. No one knows how circus peanuts got their shape and name, or how long they've been around.
Or why they exist.
Yeah, or why they are around still. One theory is that they originated with the traveling circuses where vendors sold salted peanuts and candies. By all accounts, circus peanuts date to the 1800s when they were seasonal treats and one of the original penny candies.
You know, I wonder, and this is, I think, probably giving them too much credit, but I wonder if back in the day when you could get salted peanuts or boiled peanuts, sometimes you would also get them, like, maybe with a banana, because banana and peanut butter do go well together.
Maybe.
And so I wonder if maybe that was kind of the, but again, I think I'm giving them too much credit. I think the kid in English class who reads way more into the book than the author meant, you know?
Yeah, they probably were, like, not peanut shaped, but they were probably like marshmallow banana
I bet you they just made a, like, chemical goo, and they were like, and they tasted it, and they're like, okay, you know what I mean? And they're like, maybe they didn't even mean for it to taste necessarily banana-y, but it just kind of came out, and they're like, this is all right, yeah, ship it.
Yeah. The owner of candyfavorites.com, it's a wholesale candy retailer, this guy, John Prince, says, quote, there are a few candies that actually have survived as long as circus peanuts. Quote, it's not so much candy as it's Americana. But it sounds disgusting. I mean, maybe we'll eat our words. I don't know. So
only time will tell.
Yeah. Spangler, who still produces the circus peanuts, is celebrating its 100th anniversary. This is an older article. So this is 2008. But it's best known for Dum Dum lollipops. Spangler is.
Okay. Dum Dums are
good.
And
candy canes. And has been producing circus peanuts since the 1930s in Northwest Ohio.
Which is interesting because on the picture you sent me, it says Spangler since 1906.
Yeah, so that's why this article is from 2008.
Okay.
So I think it's been in Ohio since the 1930s.
Gotcha.
But it's been around other places.
It existed somewhere technically on paper since 1903.
Yeah, technically Mr. Spangler.
Yeah, Mr. Spangler bought the company's name in 1903.
Yeah, probably so.
And then he slept for 30 years and started making candy.
He's like, I'm tired.
If only there was some sugar products to keep me up.
Let me dream about something disgusting to make.
Yeah, let me have some gross dreams for 30 years and I'll have a lot of ideas on what to make for children.
The candy is the most difficult of the company's product to make, the vice president says, which is insane. Why are you keeping making it?
All right. Oh, my God. Yeah, exactly.
Quote, you've got all these variables coming together. End quote. So there's little room.
Yeah, variables that we will not mention because if we did, you'd throw up.
There's fingers. There's so much stuff in
fingers,
there.
There's a little bit of concrete.
Just like a couple rocks, but just like
just a couple to give it that good kind of stale, hard.
You need a
taste.
Binder. Everything needs a binder.
We need to bind it. And honestly, food grade ones are too expensive.
There's little room for error when it comes to cooking temperatures and ingredients, which we've talked about, like sugar science.
Yeah.
Mainly sugar, gelatin, corn syrup, and artificial flavors. The toughest part is getting it to the right moisture.
Yeah, because if it doesn't, it balloons up and gets rock hard. And you're like, I'm putting this in my body.
like their initial rock.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So too much moisture will leave a thin, crusty layer on the outside, but too dry and they'll cave in.
Which seems like it would be the opposite. But then again, this is like nonsense, weird, like purely fake,
it's a weird
like synthesized material. So you really don't know. They truly are playing with like, I don't know.
I don't even understand. I don't even understand. Oh my God. So Bill Fentner, who has made circus peanuts for 23 years, scurries between mixers, checking the temperature gauges, adding ingredients. He says, quote, I eat them once in a while. He says, quote, one or two.
Everyone who makes them is like, I don't really like them. It's like, I eat them sometimes. It's like nobody actually likes
this guy
them.
Says one or two. That's about enough for me. End quote. That's so fucking
and
funny.
Like, and why is this? And it's somehow it still exists, even though the people who make it are like, admittedly, it's not great. It's interesting. Yeah. Is what
I
it
never
is.
Eat these, but I've been working here for 30 years.
He's like, I will put my dirty finger in it, but I won't eat it myself. You can, you goon.
The vice president's like, oh, I never eat them.
He's like, no, this shit's gross. This is very bad for you and bad for tasting.
Yeah, and the fucking mixer guy's like, once a year I'll have
he's like,
one.
At most, yeah, and he's like, at most, yeah, once a year. It's like, it's a treat, question mark.
So the mixture, once it's all batched up, it's... The article says squirted into starch.
Great use
yeah,
of words.
Right, cool. It's squirted into molds that pull out the moisture and then shape the peanut. Then the candy crystallizes into the temperature controlled rooms for about 24 hours.
And temperature is key because if you mess the temperature up, this stuff ends up being the same stuff they use to stick bricks together.
Yeah. Have you seen Ghostbusters and the Marshmallow Man? That's what happens.
Oh, yeah. It's
it'll
that.
Turn into that
it's
guy.
That. It gets big and a demon inhabits it.
So Spanglers makes varieties of shapes for holidays. So they'll make heart shapes for Valentine's Day, bunnies, chicks, and eggs for Easter.
I wonder how Peeps feels about that.
Yeah, I know, right?
Like, get off our turf, dude. We do one thing.
Yeah, a few years back, they discontinued their holiday theme line because not too many people
no
would eat marshmallows, Santas, or Christmas trees.
Yeah, we don't need it.
That's so weird that that's the cutting line of like,
oh,
but
so
not
they still
trees
do
or
like
Santas.
The other mm-hmm. ones? They still do Valentine's
yeah.
Day and junk?
Allegedly, yeah.
They all taste like bananas? Like, what the F? Like, this is such a weird,
know.
Weird snack. We're going to have to eat this, too.
It again, this is an older article, but it says that this coming Easter, so, you know, past tense,
yeah.
It said the company's scheduled to team up with Disney on a nationwide distribution of Winnie the Pooh, Piglet, Eeyore, and Tigger candies. They'll come in cotton candy, cherry, banana, and lemon flavor.
Lemon marshmallows?
Gross.
It's such odd choices. I mean, admittedly, I'm not a huge fan of, like, marshmallow-based things. I think something with like the best marshmallow based thing is like a Malamar. That shit's good because it's basically a s'more that isn't melting.
Right.
But 100%. Outside of that, like marshmallow for the sake of marshmallow is like, I don't really care.
I like marshmallow, but it's got to be like good marshmallow and it has to be encased in like good chocolate and then caramel has to.
Exactly.
Happen.
It's got to be with something else. On its own, it doesn't really do it for me. It kind of comes back to like with me and sugar. It's like if there's chocolate involved, I'm listening.
Yes.
And if there isn't chocolate involved, I don't really care most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if it's flavored, what?
Yeah, and then you're like, well, because marshmallow is one of those things that's just like a nonsense made in a lab material, you know, like so there is no basis for what it should taste like
right.
other than what the first version of it
yeah
was.
Which is sugar.
Yeah, exactly. It's just sugar. So like what flavor sugar,
like cotton candy where it's like sugar, you know, so why are we making dill pickle cotton
yeah
candy?
And bubblegum where they're just like, well, this, we're just gonna make this flavor up, like this flavor doesn't exist mm-hmm. anywhere, we've created
I agree it. So this guy, Kirk Vasha, the vice president of contract businesses, notes that they're hoping that with this Disney contract of all these different flavors with the Winnie the Pooh characters, that it will attract more children to eat it in what is, quote, an old person's candy.
Yeah, because people eat it now for nostalgia, not because it's good.
Yeah, they're like, oh, these are fucking gross. I remember now.
They're like, maybe if we put Werther's Originals in a shape, right, then kids will eat them.
Circus peanuts are about 5% of Spangler's business. Wow.
That's more than I think it should be. But then again, I've never seen Spangler's anywhere. Yeah. I don't know.
It's a privately run company and does not release overall sales figures, obviously.
Because they bad.
But still, Circus Peanuts sales were up last year and have increased 10% this year. Again, this is from 2008.
Did someone on TikTok just like bring them up and then they just like hit a trend? Like, why on earth is this sales?
I mean,
up?
This is old. This is an old article. This is 12 years old.
Oh, okay. True, true.
This guy says, we're a little perplexed why it's going up.
Yeah. He's like, it's straight up bad and people still eat it. I mean, so we'll make it, but we don't understand.
This quote, the circus peanut is such an enigma. It's hard to tell what's going to happen.
It's such a weird, interesting thing when like the CEO is like, we straight up don't get it. We don't know why anyone likes this. We don't like it. We will make it because you're eating it, but we don't know why you're eating it. It's objectively bad. Yeah.
But the vice president of business connections is like, I don't get it. I don't understand.
He's like, straight up, don't know. No idea. There's no market research that explains why people eat this.
That's so funny. So the other two leading makers of Circus Peanuts are Brax's Confections, which...
Brax does, like, it's like a bad name for someone who makes food. Because when I hear Brax, in my mind, it's like Brax is like a hard piece of, like, what is it, drywall or something like that. Like, you know what I mean? It doesn't sound... Brax doesn't sound edible or tasty.
It sounds rough.
Yeah, it sounds like rough, hard, like, useful, but not... but that's it.
Yeah. So it's Brax Confections and Melster's Candies are the two other leading makers of Circus Peanuts.
Melster's, which also sounds kind of like a low-grade evil wizard, but sure.
Melster.
It's I, Melster.
Sales at Melster have been on the rise in recent years, despite Circus Peanuts' quote, bad rap.
Despite no one liking them and people buying them as a gag, we're doing pretty well.
Anything that's survived 200 years is pretty good. Because it's noting that it's been around since the 1800s, you know.
I mean, sure.
I guess.
It's like we can say the same thing about candy corn is another one that's been around for ages. And it's like, I think probably 10% of the population likes this.
Yeah, black licorice, you know candy what I mean? Corn, those things are just trash.
Yeah, licorice is another good example. It's like these are hyper specific to like small groups, but somehow have stayed alive for a long ass time. And I genuinely don't understand. I bet you Kaboom cereal is way better than all of these things that we're talking about, but Kaboom's 100%. Not around. So you're like,
yeah,
maybe just because there's a lot of other cereals that are better and there's nothing else that is like this abomination. So
they say that it has a lot to do with nostalgia.
Ooh. Yeah, that makes sense.
Candy shop owner Pam Lissman says customers looking for a reminder of their childhood will often find their way to a bag of Circus Peanuts at her store in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. She says, quote, you can't be a candy store without Circus Peanuts. You can.
Yeah, you could.
You could.
You could go on. You could. I mean, it is a weird thing, but I guess that like, it's the same thing like me bringing up Dunkaroos and stuff like that. It's like I would in the modern day, I would only ever eat a Dunkaroo to be like, yeah, I remember when I was a kid and this was like a snack that was
right.
Good.
And then that's that and done.
Yeah, exactly. I would never just if I saw that on the shelf, I wouldn't be like, I'm an adult man and I do want a Dunkaroo.
Right. And I need that. Here. Right. Totally. So there's various brands of Circus Peanuts, but Spangler seems to be
top dog
with the Brax and the top Masters, peanut. So.
I wonder what Mr. Peanut thinks about Circus Peanuts.
Probably the same that we feel. Yeah, imagine. But we'll definitely try, I guess, a few brands when we do our Patreon episode. Yeah.
They're too iconic. So, and then we can have the debate amongst ourselves. You, me, and Catherine can be like, do any of us like this?
Right?
Statistically,
we should try
maybe
to find some different
will.
Flavors, too, if we can.
Yeah.
But I'm sure they're all disgusting.
Yeah, we're going to need to, maybe that should be like the final one we have because it's such a, you know, iconic thing. But then I think we also need a palate cleanser of something.
Not gross. Yeah.
Yeah, like maybe we all have a corn dog after just to like wash it down. Because corn dogs are actually good. Oh, they're kind of no matter where you have them.
Yeah, you can't go wrong.
No, it's just like how gross am I going to feel is the only difference between corn dog.
Truly, truly. So that's just a few circus foods and circus themed foods. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was cool to see how pervasive circus is in like food branding.
Well, it's such an interesting aesthetic to tap into, you know, like as soon as you open that box up, there's a lot of stuff that comes with it that will evoke a lot of like, because I think a lot of times with cereal, so much of it is like, you know, what is the aesthetic? Like Flintstones is like cavemen. So what with cavemen, what are we going? We can do dinosaurs. We can do, you know, like there's like stuff like that. So mm-hmm. Lucky Charms, we can do. Okay. What are like things that are associated with luck? You know, we have a, there's all these kind of like little things. As soon as you get your mascot, you know what you can base your cereal off. And circus is like, it's all there. It's already figured out.
They just went too nuts with those cereals. I think they just went too nuts. They didn't hone in.
I think Kaboom was a little bit of a better angle. It was just
and
like,
it lasted way longer.
It makes sense because the other one was all over the place. It's just like throw every circus related thing in there. Like rings, what rings? Cheerios is rings. You don't need like rings. Is fun.
Yeah,
right? I get why they are circusy, but like, how do you make it into a cereal version?
And also,
you
like don't. The manufacturing of all that shapes and marshmallows must have been so expensive.
Too busy.
Yeah,
too busy. Too many shapes.
Insane, but. The animal crackers and all of that stuff, I think people forget how that's like everybody grew up with animal crackers.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was really interesting that it's so intertwined in how like your everyday growing up and you don't even realize all that stuff.
It is pretty nuts because like, you know, circus is such a specific thing that it doesn't always come up in just like casual conversation unless you're specifically talking about the circus. But there are so many things that it like reaches out and like has touched throughout the years.
Yeah. And no one would really ever know that that's the origin of it. Yeah. So if you guys want to listen to us indulge in most of these tasty treats.
Oh yeah. If you want to hear me complain about how sweet everything is.
Yeah. Then you can subscribe to our Patreon, and that's Patreon.com/.
I think it's /.
Yeah. Circus Stories. And that's going to have some cool upcoming bonus content, including a very special episode where we're recording us doing some live taste testing of some of these items. Some circus peanuts, some flavored floss, some cotton candy.
Oh, yeah. We got to get some cotton candy.
Get our hands on some animal crackers. I think we should do like Nabisco versus generic.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Like a Pepsi challenge.
I mean,
challenge.
We're going to have a couple. Exactly. And then we do blind taste test maybe. Be like, what do we think? Which one is which?
And then I want you to try those Mother's cookies. And see how waxy.
Yeah, I got to try one of those. Just know what the wax is all about.
All that stuff.
What the wax craze is.
You got to try it. So that's our circus food ep.
There you go, ladies and gents.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. And if you guys want to see any of the images we talked about today, you can check our Instagram.
Check the gram.
And that's at circus.stories. If you have any fun circus stories or fun circus info of your own that you want to send us, you can email us.
Hit us up
at circusstoriespodcast@gmail.com.
Send us that fan art. We will shout you out.
Yeah, send us stuff. And again, just rate and subscribe. Tell your friends. That helps.
Spread the word.
Spread the word.
We love when you do that.
Yeah, it super duper helps. And then shout out to our Patreon subscribers. Herbert, for sure. Allison.
Shout it out. We love you guys.
Rory. And then Stephanie.
Stephanie.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And if any of you guys are interested, we already have some stuff up there right now. You can check out a very good interview with Callie and her dad. And I mean, like, that's like straight circus facts from the person who's like lived it growing up. So that I've heard that one. Very good.
Very.
And then
good.
We just did our commentary on Greatest Showman, which we've set it up so that you can basically push play and watch it with us with our commentary.
It's very fun. Very, very fun.
Very fun.
Yeah. And we've got some more silly stuff coming down the pipeline. So stay tuned for that. And you guys, please, please, please,
please.
It's so important that you check your boilers. Check them.
Safety first, everybody.
You gotta check your boilers.
Check those, please.
It's very important. Check them. You're inside.
And if they're too hot, don't touch them.
But do check on them. and see if, but do exactly. See if they're comfortable.
Put on an oven mitt, knock on it, put your ear right up, but not touching, and listen to see if it's chugging along right.
Yeah, hopefully it is. I'm sure it is, but you just got to double check.
Hopefully it is. You just got to be careful.
So thanks again for listening, and we'll see you down the road, friends.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bilbo Baggins. Bilbo, bye bye.
Oh, those are great.